spent much of yesterday heaping praise upon the Russian dictator and describing himself or mourning the fact that he used to be the apple of Putin's eye before the invasion. And it is to that benighted territory that our attention is inexorably drawn once again. If Trump continues to back Putin over Zelensky, what happens to Ukraine?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Donald Trump is facing growing calls from European leaders to defend Ukraine's interests at Friday's summit with Vladimir Putin. A statement from all EU states except Hungary says the path to peace cannot be decided without Kiev. Mr. Trump raised the prospect of both sides ceding land during a White House press briefing yesterday. The Guardian's David Smith, who was there, says the remarks have triggered some alarm.
He suggested that within 2 minutes he might know if Putin wants to make a deal, and if the answer is no, Trump said basically he'd wish Putin good luck and that would be the end of this negotiation, which is not hugely reassuring. Trump criticized Volodymyr Zelensky for mishandling the situation.
A government minister's told LBC that asylum seekers should not be singled out as a threat to women and girls. Baroness Smith has pushed back against Reform UK's claim that some have a medieval view of women's rights.
There are too many, largely men, who are responsible for violence against women of all types. And that's why we need to take the sort of action that this government is taking. And it's why I hope Reform will change their position and actually support us in the tough legislation that we're bringing forward to tackle that violence.
Reform MP Sarah Pochin claimed yesterday that some migrants are much more likely to be convicted of sexual offences than British people. The number of migrants who have crossed the English Channel since Labour took office is set to pass 50,000. Ministers have admitted the issue remains a very big challenge, but say they are taking action to tackle the issue. It's claimed nearly all pharmacies in England have seen a surge in shop theft in the past year. LBC's Tom Harrigan has more details.
The National Pharmacy Association asked more than 450 of its members about theft. 88% said the problem had got worse in the past 12 months, with reports of people filling bags with drugs and walking out the shop. A similar number claimed their staff had faced more aggressive behaviour than before. A fifth had seen physical assaults on their employees. Experts are also concerned about people taking stolen medicines that haven't been prescribed for them, saying it could seriously affect their health.
Britain's jobless rate remained at a four-year high in the 3 months to June. Figures released this morning show unemployment stood at 4.7%, reflecting a cooling in the jobs market. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 25 at 91.55. The pound buys $1.34 and the euro 15. LBC weather, hot and sunny for most, cloudier with a few showers further north, a high of 34 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Today's another busy one in the Thing household. Mum's mowing the lawn, Dad's cooking tea, Ash is upstairs spinning tunes, and the twins are on a mission. Luckily, the Things are beating the price cap with a cheaper fixed tariff from British Gas. So, the twins can keep making sure the galaxy stays safe. Search British Gas Tariffs. British Gas. Taking care of things. Eligibility and T's and C's apply. To verify, visit britishgas.co.uk/verify.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 10 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. There's a PhD to be written, isn't there? I'm not going to do it, but you feel free. A PhD to be written on not just what it is that makes things matter to us, but what it is that makes that change. Because, of course, what mattered a year ago might be rather different from what mattered today, despite the fact that the situation on the ground or the things that made us care haven't actually gone away. We just care less. A form of emotional attrition, almost. You just sort of chip away. I'm thinking of Ukraine and, to a lesser extent, Gaza. I think Gaza has come back round again with the increasingly irrefutable evidence of appalling conduct there. Ukraine has gone quiet for many of us, even though the fighting continues and the tensions remain at fever pitch. And, of course, the reason why it's back in the spotlight today has very little to do with what is happening on the ground in Ukraine and everything to do with the fact that Donald Trump is set to meet his hero in Alaska on Friday, Vladimir Putin, and seek, well, what exactly? A distraction from the continuing Epstein scandal back home in America, I suspect. I don't know that Donald Trump is in a position to do anything at all. 24 hours, was it? He said he'd have it fixed in on the campaign trail. He'd have this war finished within on the first day back in power. And then he has a meeting and Vladimir Putin says things to him and he comes out doing a lap of honour, Donald Trump, that is. And 10 minutes later, Vladimir Putin sends more missiles into Ukraine and makes an absolute mockery of whatever it was that Donald Trump thought that he had achieved in the first place. Excuse me. The bit I can't quite get my head around, even now, is the contempt with which he speaks of Volodymyr Zelensky. Not just, of course, the contempt with which he speaks about him, but the utter contempt with which he speaks to him. Most obviously when he turned up in the White House. The best way to understand this is to boil it down to almost primeval, atavistic behavior. Donald Trump honestly believes that bullies should prevail. So that if the big boy at school demands your dinner money, then you are an idiot if you do not give it to him. I do think sometimes it can be that simple. You are an idiot if you do not give him your dinner money. If you go to the teacher to complain, you are an idiot. If you seek to muster together a group of friends that might be able to resist the bully, you are an idiot. If you do anything other than recognize the, quote, natural, end quote, order of things, then you are an idiot. I am bigger than you, and I want all your money. Certainly, sir. Here it is. Because the clip from yesterday that I couldn't really get my head around was still, even now, having witnessed so much of it, was the bit about how Zelensky had got everything wrong. I can't believe he did what he did, said Trump. I'll find the clip for you in the next few minutes, and or rather Eleanor will. But the idea that he looked at the illegal invasion of Ukraine by a murderous despot, a genocidal maniac, and decided that the people resisting it were the wrong ones in this piece. I think it's worth pausing here for a minute, isn't it? It's worth pausing here just for a nanosecond. You watch an illegal invasion of sovereign territory, which is expected to unfold almost seamlessly. They were expecting to have a Kremlin puppet installed in Kyiv by the end of that opening weekend. The scale and the strength of the Ukrainian resistance, I think, shocked everybody except Ukrainians, probably even shocked some of them. And Trump's position remains that Zelensky should have legged it, should have rolled over, should have bent, surrendered, acquiesced. And Trump, well, either can't forgive him for that, or simply can't understand it, can't understand the defiance of that so-called natural order. And here we are now, years later, 3 years later, give or take, here we are now looking at a changed map with Russian forces successfully repelled in the northeast of the country and still camped on the southeastern borders, Donetsk, it's still, and of course Crimea, which was already still under Russian control. And now Donald Trump turns up on Friday to tell Putin what? I don't even know. So what question do we ask today? I wonder whether the West has made a terrible mistake by leaving Donald Trump in charge. I wonder whether it should have been clear. Whether or not we had the capacity to do it or not, I do not know. But I do know that the Financial Times reports this morning a tripling in speed of Europe's production of weapons. The weapons factories of Europe are expanding at three times the rate of peacetime. 7 million square metres of new industrial development that represents rearmament on a historic scale. It's gone into overdrive since that full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022. The FT has looked at radar satellite data covering 150 facilities across 37 companies. This is a defence revival, the likes of which many thought we would never see. Most obviously that American historian Francis Fukuyama, who wrote about the end of history when the Berlin Wall came down, that liberalism had triumphed over communism and there was no way that we would ever return to the sort of standoff of the Cold War. This is not policy rhetoric or pledges. This is concrete and steel. And it comes as EU governments argue over how to sustain armed deliveries to Kyiv. And who here knows enough to answer the question of whether or not Europe has an inalienable moral duty to protect the Ukrainian people if Donald Trump decides to take his ball home, if Donald Trump continues upon a path of diminishing and diluting US support for Ukraine, continues upon a path of praising and sweet-talking Vladimir Putin while insulting and offending Volodymyr Zelensky and, by association, the entire Ukrainian people. I don't think it is an exaggeration to say that he blames Zelensky for the war. He blames Zelensky for the war. He said yesterday, and I've got the quote in front of me, that Zelensky didn't need to go into war and kill everybody. He blames Zelensky for the war. In fact, I think you should hear it in his own inimitable tone.
And I get along with Zelensky, but, you know, I disagree with what he's done. Very, very severely disagree. This is a war that should have never happened, wouldn't have happened. But I'll be speaking to Zelensky. The next meeting will be with Zelensky and Putin, or Zelensky and Putin and me. I'll be there if they need. But I want to have a meeting set up between the two leaders. I was a little bothered by the fact that Zelensky was saying, well, I have to get constitutional approval. I mean, he's got approval to go into war and kill everybody, but he needs approval to do a land swap, because there'll be some land swapping going on. I know that through Russia and through conversations with everybody, to the good, for the good of Ukraine. Good stuff, not bad stuff. Also, some bad stuff for both. So there's good and there's bad. But it's very complex because you have lines that are very uneven. And there'll be some swapping. There'll be some changes in land. And the word that they will use is, they make changes. We're going to change the lines, the battle lines. Russia's occupied a big portion of Ukraine. They've occupied some very prime territory. We're going to try and get some of that territory back for Ukraine.
I mean, it's just, what an irredeemable idiot the man is. What's the worst thing in the world is a stupid person who's too stupid to realise how stupid they are. Thinks he's a genius. And of course there are plenty of people who have also decided that he's a genius. I bet he can't name a single town in Ukraine. I bet he can't name a single region, a single city, a single politician beyond Volodymyr Zelensky. And there he is, blaming the leader of the invaded country for the resistance. How do you even put that into historical context? What would the equivalent be? Blaming Poland for the Nazi invasion? I don't know whether people did that at the time, whether there were sort of Lord Haw-haws or apologists doing that kind of thing at the time, blaming Sudetenland for the annexation, blaming Poland for the invasion, blaming France. Did we blame the French when the Nazis marched on Paris? I mean, it's absolutely incredible. I mean, truly incredible that you can look at the illegal invasion of a sovereign territory and have a problem not with the invader, but with the resistance. And this is going to be dominating the news for the next few days. I think, and this is the first question you can answer, 0345 60 60973, I think we're looking at a world now where Europe is aligning itself with Volodymyr Zelensky's Ukraine, with Ukraine, Europe and Ukraine, and Donald Trump is aligning himself with Russia. I mean, I'm cautious of hyperbole. But if you are, and we may do some psychology today, because we probably don't have the knowledge or the depth of knowledge to do detail. But if you are blaming the victim for acts of aggression, you are essentially facilitating, encouraging, and abetting the offender, right? You are. I mean, if it's a bit like women getting blamed for being attacked because of what they were wearing or whatever ludicrous nonsense your average columnist or, in the old days, high court judges can come up with. You're blaming the victim for an attack. Or worse, in fact, you're blaming a victim for retaliating after being attacked instead of just meekly accepting whatever fate it was that the aggressor had decided to mete out to you. It's breathtaking, right? And that is where we are now. A murderous maniac rampaging through sovereign territory with the most powerful man in the world, or the other most powerful man in the world, rubbing his hands with glee and blaming the person being attacked. The mind truly boggles. I mean, where do we go? How do we do this? Is that a fair question to ask, whether or not we're looking at Donald Trump? Even the Daily Mail reports Donald Trump heaped praise on Vladimir Putin yesterday as he confirmed Volodymyr Zelensky will not be invited to their meeting in Alaska on Friday. Okay, what's the point of this meeting? 0345 6060973. I mentioned to you late last week that a very, very valued contributor to this program, Anthony in Bletchley Park, had passed away last month. And it was on mornings like this that he, with his history of incredible work in military intelligence, you knew, didn't you, when you listened to him, that he was not telling us the full story about his qualifications to contribute to these conversations. But these were the mornings when he was of, I mean, on inexpressible value to us. What is the point of this meeting? What is Trump hoping to get out of it? And what is Putin hoping to get out of it? 0345 6060973. Do you agree with me that we are being a little bit mealy-mouthed about the reality, the real politic of the situation? It is Trump and Putin versus Ukraine and Europe. Do you agree with me? 0345 6060973. And whether you do or not, what does that mean? Your agreement or your disagreement, or the new truth? The new truth that the world order hasn't just been redrawn, it's been torn up and set on fire. I admire Vladimir Putin. I love Vladimir Putin. I used to be the apple of his eye. Donald Trump claiming in public that Vladimir Putin used to see him as the apple of his eye. It's borderline homoerotic, the way he talks about Vladimir Putin. And that's not a parallel I would draw often. But it's sick how he talks about him. It's as if he's there rubbing his thighs in excitement at the thought of Vladimir Putin murdering thousands of Ukrainians for the crime of having been born on soil that no longer belonged to Russia. And, historically speaking, never should have done. And Volodymyr Zelensky, meanwhile, should never have done what he did, should never have resisted the attack. So talk to me about the events, both unfolding and unfolded, with a particular focus upon the this. What's the point of this summit is the question I've got for you. And you can't answer nothing, because they must think there's something in it for them. Putin, who is wanted by the International Criminal Court, just like Benjamin Netanyahu, of course, Putin waltzes into Alaska, shakes hands with Donald Trump. The message that sends back to Moscow is, ha, Yabu sucks to international law, and Yabu sucks to war crime allegations, and Yabu sucks to the International Criminal Court. But tragically, and for me at least, still incredibly, that's not even unique on the globe at the moment. That's not even unique when it comes to allies or former enemies of the West. Incredible that Putin is able to do this in Alaska. What does that mean, that summit, that meeting? 0345 6060973. And yeah, I do want you to have a crack at this, because I don't know if we can really go anywhere unless we understand this bit. Why does Trump blame Zelensky for this war? Okay, come at that either militarily, historically, or psychologically. Why does Donald Trump blame Volodymyr Zelensky for this war? He categorically does. He clearly does. He explicitly does. Inarguably. I'm running out of adverbs. But why? Why does he blame Volodymyr Zelensky? What does it say about either him about the situation, about Vladimir Putin, about the war, about international... How do we sit here still wriggling without focusing upon the single most important element of this whole hideous saga, which is... There it is. I blame the victim. Why does he do that? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. In fact, forgive me, in many ways, that's the question I most want you to answer. I don't know that anyone can have a crack, and this is a challenge, by the way, not an admission of defeat. I don't know that anyone's got anything particularly illuminating to say about what this summit is for, but you never stop surprising me, so that question remains on the board. What the hell is this summit for? And then the second bit, very simply, is why does he blame the victim, not the aggressor? Why? 03456060973.
LBC.
LBC is investigating the impact of over-tourism. Sheila Fogarty was joined by the UK General Manager at Intrepid Travel, Joanna Reeve.
Over-tourism is excess negative impact on a destination, something that negatively impacts the local community. We want to tackle the problem, not just pick it up and move it somewhere else. Mm. For us, our how is very much around small intimate groups.
Listen back to the full interview, thanks to Intrepid Travel, on the LBC app.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
The new single drops. The world tour begins. As artists create the music we love, you could be right there in the mix. Calling all young creatives. If you want a career in music, then listen up. Global Academy have a new 6-4 music production course. State-of-the-art studios, practical experience, hands-on learning with music professionals. Awesome. Apply now at globalacademy.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 21 minutes after 10, and it is an extraordinary question that we've never asked before. Why on earth does Donald Trump blame Volodymyr Zelensky for the ongoing war in Ukraine, which is essentially the Ukrainian attempt to repel an illegal invasion? I apologise for never having asked you that before. If we can get to the bottom of that, perhaps the rest will fall into place. Tony's in Fareham. Tony, what do you reckon?
Hello, James. Good morning to you. I think his overall aim by blaming Zelensky is to ally himself with Russia, and I mean that in the loosest sense possible, so that he can detach it from China, China's influence. So that at the end of the day, what he would hope for is some kind of alliance, inverted commas, with Russia.
Are the inverted commas even necessary? How surprised would you be if the United States of America under Donald Trump, in complete defiance of international law, let alone opinion, just decided to open up bilateral negotiations and all sorts of trade announcements that would make both of them look good at home, Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump, having successfully corralled much of the media into sycophancy and supine support?
Absolutely. He's got a lot of people at home, especially in the Republican Party, who don't want anything to do with Ukraine. My view is that that's his eventual aim. He's trying to...
I like that. Again, it's a bit 3D chess, and he doesn't look to me like a man who could even play 1D chess, but... In terms of simple atavistic urges, he sees China as a major threat. A lot of money is going to China that could be coming to the US, and it's increasingly obvious that he sees money coming to the US as money that he should be taking a slice from. The latest Nvidia deal probably speaks directly to that fear. And therefore, Putin becomes a sort of a broker rather than a player, and separating him from China. Is good for America. Why Friday then? What's the point of Friday's summit, do you think?
I think, you know, he's going to lean on Zelensky to make compromises with territory. And I think that the Europeans, quite rightly, all except Hungary, it seems.
Yes.
Orbán in Hungary, who's another of Putin's puppets.
We'll resist, but what with? That's the problem, isn't it? There's a sense, perhaps, despite this story in the Financial Times about an incredible surge in arms production in European countries, it's possible that it's already too late for Europe. It may never have been possible for Europe to step up to the plate that Donald Trump seems determined to vacate. And yet there are arguments among EU governments over how to sustain arms deliveries to Kyiv. But in the face of a potentially wavering US commitment, that becomes incredibly urgent. But I think you're probably right. If not all roads, then many roads lead to China. Certainly an obsession of Donald Trump's. Matt's in Hull. Matt, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Yeah.
Hello, mate.
In terms of blaming Zelensky,
yes,
that's a very typical American playbook move. They always try and associate any regime that they're not, you know, wanting to deal with, yeah, with a single person. So it's Assad in Syria, it's Saddam Hussein in Iraq, it's Kim Jong-un in North Korea. And even if you remember early on in the Gaza situation, you had, you know, this is all down to Netanyahu, and if only we could get Netanyahu out, things would improve, but it's him who's causing the trouble. So they tend to try and
personalize. That wasn't Trump's position.
On Gaza at the beginning?
Yeah. He wasn't even in power. I don't think I've ever heard Trump say a particularly negative word about Netanyahu, but I may have missed it.
But it may be the American position.
I don't even know if it was the American position. I disagree with you for once on that, Matt. Maybe.
Right.
That last roll of the dial would be a dice would be the bit I disagreed with you, because like none of the examples you've given posit the victim of aggression as the cause of aggression,
because the Ukraine is we're supposed to be our ally, and therefore we shouldn't be treating them this way.
I
think the other factor playing in is that, you know, Trump watched Biden go through that humiliating withdrawal from Afghanistan.
Which he negotiated.
Yes,
that was Trump's deal.
Almost certainly did, to leave Biden with an untenable position, you know, that could only go wrong. But he doesn't want to see something like that on his books, and he's made the calculation that Russia is going to prevail in Ukraine. And
so
he just wants to go with the winner.
He's seeing which way the crowd is running and then rushing to the front of it and pretending that he's leading. Does the detail support that? I mean, certainly in the absence of a massive European increase in support, is there a sense that the areas around Donetsk and Kherson are kind of irretrievable now for Ukraine?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, if you look right back at the beginning of the war, in the April, they had an agreement in Istanbul to end it, and there was no territorial part of that. It was, you know, you would retain those regions, but you would recognise the Minsk Accords that had gone before, and, you know, effectively the civil war in Ukraine that had been going on since 2014 would come to an end. And when that failed to... Basically, the Americans scuppered that and said, no, we want to carry this war on and weaken Russia. There's, do you know of the RAND Corporation in America? That's a military think tank. It's Tufton Street on
steroids.
they wrote a paper in 2019 called Extending Russia. So this is 3 years before Russia entered. And it basically said, in order to financially and militarily weaken Russia, we can't send troops because that would be World War III.
Yeah.
So we need to find a willing population that will fight for us, and that's the best place would be Ukraine. And this is how we provoke the conflict to begin, and this is, you know, and then that will weaken Russia economically and militarily. And it hasn't worked out that way. It certainly hasn't worked out that way.
But I'm not. I'm not sure Trump would have signed up for that, even if some of the people pulling his strings did. I wonder whether it's, if you think of the U.S. history, not so much latterly, it's more covert now than it has been in the past, but they're quite an imperial power.
The U.S.
Yeah.
They intervene in
very sinister fashions, particularly across Central America and some other countries, including the Middle East. So maybe Trump Oh, man, this will sound almost like a compliment. I really don't mean it that way. So Trump is just explicitly doing what other US administrations have done implicitly, or he's overtly saying, well, of course the major aggressor should prevail, because we are usually the major aggressor and we should always prevail.
I forget the lady's name, but there's an American researcher, and she, when every so many years documents are released from CIA and government archives, and between the end of the World War II and 89, when the Cold War ended, she counted 64 covert regime change operations carried out by the CIA and another six overt ones. And America's the only imperial power in the world. You know, what are the signs of an imperial power? They have overseas bases, they have a big aircraft carrier fleet, because you need to be able to project power around the world. Well, China doesn't have that, Russia doesn't have that.
And yet, historically, Russia would have been the only country that came close to providing a counterbalance to that internationally before the end of the Cold War, and they were the sworn enemy. So if they're no longer the sworn enemy, America has nowhere near as much to fear from Russia as they used to, then Trump, if I knit together the two calls we've taken already, then Trump can actually afford to sort of soft soap Putin in pursuit of the alienation of China. I don't know. I mean, it's a vacuum into which any explanation or theory can move, because when it comes to trying to understand what's going on in Donald Trump's addled head, I don't know what you need to do that. I'm not even sure he knows. But the simplest question to answer is why is he blaming the victim for the aggression? And that probably works on a personal level as well as a military and political one. It's 10:30. Thank you, Matt. Thomas Watts is here now with your headlines.
President Zelensky has thanked European leaders for their clear support for Ukraine's independence. Leaders of EU countries issued a statement this morning ahead of Donald Trump's talks with Vladimir Putin on Friday. A government minister has told LBC that asylum seekers should not be singled out as a threat to women and girls. Baroness Smith has pushed back against a Reform MP's claim that migrants have a medieval view of women's rights. Health alerts have come into force around the country, with temperatures in the mid-30s expected. Officials say there could be a significant impact across health and social care services in the coming days. LBC weather staying hot and sunny for most, cloudier with a few showers further north, a high of 34 degrees.
This is LBC.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centerline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
Get a step closer to winning a huge £20,000. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Winplus, great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Hello, I'm Vanessa Feltz.
Hi, I'm Saskia Joss.
And welcome to Help My Child's Anxious. Each week we're tackling the toughest challenges of raising children, offering you practical advice, a sense of humour and endless empathy. I'll be joined by my daughter Saskia, who just happens to be a qualified child therapist.
So whether you're struggling with your child's anxiety, coping with tricky teenagers, or just need to hear from someone who gets it, this is the place for you.
You can listen to Help My Child's Anxious on Global Player, download it from the App Store or go to globalplayer.com.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
33 minutes after 10. Things I'm really not sure about, but often pop up in the course of conversations like this one. Chapter 463. He probably does want a Nobel Peace Prize, doesn't he? He probably is animated by the status that would bestow. But is it really going to be a driving force? Does he really believe that the Academy would give him a Nobel Peace Prize if he essentially strong-armed Ukraine into surrender? I technically, a surrender constitutes peace, but not if the aggressor has come away with far more than they started with. So I don't know. It's important to use that phrase. I'm never sure any of us use it enough. And I find my relationship with the notion of kompromat shifts a lot. It ebbs and flows. Kompromat, I think, is the Russian word for material with which you could blackmail somebody. Material which compromises somebody to sort of find a common root in the word. And there is often, or there have long been claims that Vladimir Putin has got something on Donald Trump. And while it's certainly true to say that the American president never, as far as I can tell, does anything that might seriously upset the Russian president, the idea that it is as simple as that, as I say, sort of rises and falls in my own mind as a plausible explanation for what we are watching. The blaming of Zelensky, doing everything at every turn to appease and placate Vladimir Putin, bemoaning the fact that he's no longer the apple of the murderous dictator's eye. Remember, hideous men admire Vladimir Putin. Nigel Farage, of course, has spoken about how Vladimir Putin is the politician in the world that he admires most. Hearing one of his MPs in the news there accusing migrants of having medieval attitudes to women, which presumably means that they would say things like, I'm automatically attracted to them. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. I just kiss them. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. You can grab them by the genitals. You can do anything. That'd be the kind of attitude she's referring to, described by the leader of her party, of course, as just locker room talk. But people admire him. Maybe Trump's just one of them. Maybe it's not a PhD thesis. Bullies love bullies. And, you know, middle grade bullies really, really love world class bullies. And therefore Zelensky's decision to resist and retaliate and defend Ukraine with blood to Trump looks ridiculous. To a draft dodger, it looks ridiculous. To a coward and a bully, and all bullies are cowards, not all cowards are bullies, it just looks ridiculous. Why are you doing this? I don't know. So why the big summit on Friday? What's going to come out of it? A few of you suggesting the only thing we can be sure of is that Ukraine will wake up on Saturday to yet another nightmare, because that always seems to be what Putin does after a meeting with Trump. Trump comes out and says, it's all gone very well, we're getting on brilliantly, we're making real progress. And then Putin drops 100 bombs on Ukraine. I don't know. I don't know. It wouldn't be much of a job if I said that all the time in response to every subject, but I still think more of us should say it more often than we currently do. Jonathan's on the Wirral. Jonathan, what do you reckon?
I personally think that when we try to assign grand to this specifically,
yes,
grand political strategy to Donald Trump's blaming of Zelensky and Ukraine, I think we're giving him too much credit. Mm. I think it's quite simple, and that he has narcissistic tendencies. What he wants is a mutualistic respect with Vladimir Putin, who he has said in the past that he has a great admiration for.
Yeah.
And he's
like a bromance. Like, I mean, literally, just like, I really want his approval.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's it. I want his approval. And it's tricky. I can't just come out and call him a genius and give him everything that he wants, because, politics, domestic and international. But deep, deep down, I watch Vladimir Putin and I kind of want to be him.
Yes. I think that's also a key part of it. I think he admires very much the control that Vladimir Putin has over his own country, and almost wants to emulate that. And so that might also be part of the reason why they're meeting in Alaska, because he wants advice from Vladimir Putin as to how to handle dissent in his own country. That might be a bit of a stretch, but I certainly think that the reason he's victim-blaming Ukraine is narcissism.
Well, coupled with this bizarre, and Farage has displayed it as well, this bizarre attraction to the murderous dictator. I mean, listen, there were people in this country in the 1930s who thought Hitler was a wonderful guy. Most obviously the owner of the Daily Mail, whose family still own that newspaper. But just the rest of us can't really get our head around it, can they? Acts of epic, unprovoked aggression, resulting in the deaths of thousands of people, And the one standing up to the bully is the problem. I don't know. Some days I think we're not thinking it through enough. Other days, I agree with you, we're overthinking it. And some days, I quite like this message, which just says, he's just an idiot. I'm getting bored with these discussions, James, trying to second guess the strategies or reasons behind his actions. The answer could just be as simple, he's an idiot. But, I don't think we can ever quite go there. Two things can be true at the same time. Three things can be true at the same time. But that simple question, it's got to be deeper than that. Deeper than idiocy, but perhaps narcissism fits the bill. Thank you, Jonathan. Mendoza is in Vauxhall. Mendoza, what would you like to say?
Right, James, this goes simply as this. It goes back to when Trump asked Zelensky to get some dirt on Biden, on Hunter Biden.
Really withheld huge amounts of aid, potentially, until he did it. Yeah.
And believe, that was the blackmail, right?
Yeah.
And Zelensky was not falling for it. He didn't want nothing to do with it. And Trump has never, ever forgiven him.
You think it's that simple? Hell hath no fury like a mango Mussolini scorn.
It's simple. That guy is like a spoilt child. You know, he's... And he's never forgiven Zelensky for that.
Do you know what happened? Do you know about the whistleblower?
Go on, yeah.
So it was never... The aid, he was withholding aid. That bit is true.
He was withholding the aid, which he should have...
$400 million dollars worth that had already been congressionally mandated. But the only reason he released the aid is because he was told that a whistleblower had already filed a complaint. It hadn't even reached Congress or the public at that point. He just knew that the gig was up, so he released the aid before the story exploded.
Now, while you're on that, you've got to remember that there's a whole heap of arms that are in Poland at the moment, which was paid for before Trump had become into power, which they did not release to Ukraine.
So, leaving that aside, none of this matter. As I've said a few times today, when there's a vacuum, then anything can move into it.
Yeah.
But the idea that this is just a petty vendetta, it's not just that, is it? Because he genuinely wants Vladimir Putin to give him a biscuit. But it's a petty vendetta. Zelensky refused to help him dig up dirt on Biden. I think was he impeached for that? It's so hard to keep up with what he's actually been impeached for.
You know what? It's done so many things that I tell you, my brain's spinning.
Well, try doing it for a living, mate. Seriously, you're getting no sympathy from me. It's insane. So I actually can't remember whether he got impeached for that or not. But I can remember that he must. I mean, he blew a gasket, and he's never forgiven. None of this actually matters.
How hot this is, you know. And so he will blame Zelensky for anything. Believe me, it's as simple as that. The other thing is, I mean, I've been through this with you before about the six times that he's been bankrupted. Mm. There's no bank in America that will touch him. You know, and
There is now, but there wasn't for a long time. There wasn't in the wilderness.
Yeah, exactly, and he had to go out of town to get money.
His son said
that. Yeah, and the place he went was Russia.
His son literally said, "We're struggling to raise money from U.S. banks, but it doesn't matter because we're raising loads in Russia." And we're back to these sort of weird, what do we call them? Nuggets, I suppose. That the prospect of compromat, whether it is something sexual or whether it's something financial. I don't know that the rug pulling theory works anymore because Trump and his family have enriched themselves so hideously. Particularly since the second administration kicked in, that the idea that somebody had the goods on them financially probably wouldn't matter anymore. So it's more likely to be personal life indiscretions. He's terrified by Epstein. I don't know how big a part that plays in his processes at the moment. The idea that this is another way of distracting the domestic audience away from the still growing scandal regarding the disgraced financier, paedophile, people trafficker, and close former personal friend of Donald Trump. They fell out, he claims, over Epstein stealing young girls from his Mar-a-Lago resort. So I there's so much there. So much there. But none of it really answers the question of what this meeting on Friday is likely to or designed to achieve. And maybe the answer is it doesn't matter. You're treating him like a normal leader pursuing normal objectives. And he is he is not that thing. Thank you, Mendoza. 10:43 is the time. You want to join the conversation? There's a couple of phone lines free now for the first time since 10 o'clock. The number you need is 0345 6060 973. And the questions sort of move around a bit when we're having a conversation like this. But the thing that I am most intrigued by, and we've had some plausible answers to it already, why he blames Zelensky for the war. Why he blames the victim for the violence. It's poignant, actually. Sometimes you're looking at something for so long, you can't see the wood for the trees. But everyone's reporting it like that now, even media outlets that have been quite sympathetic to Trump in the past. He is blaming Zelensky for the war. And I don't know what the international equivalent of that would be, but it wouldn't be pretty, would it? And yet here we are, watching it happen in real time. And journalism, and I used to get cross about this, but I just think it's a vocabulary. You can only report upon a meeting between the United States president and the Russian president in language that exists, using a vocabulary that exists. I'd like to have a go. I'd like someone to lend me a newspaper or a newsroom so that you could actually put in all the adjectives when you're describing them. So, you know, multiple impeached, self-confessed sex offender or whatever it may be, epic kleptocrat, genocidal maniac, all of those things. But, I mean, the industry has chosen not to, for reasons I fully understand. I'm not sure there is any choice here. You can only report these meetings with the vocabulary of normality, even when there's nothing normal about either of the men or the meeting. So what's it likely to deliver? Answer, who the hell knows? But it won't be good for Ukraine. It's 10:45.
Coming up this week on Tom Swarbrick. Is a good education still a way out of poverty? Is it still the best vehicle for social mobility to get you up on the earning scale, to get you a better life? Is that still it? Or are we in a position that there are lots of people who have worked quite hard at school, done okay, done the right thing, but they've not got a better life than mum or dad? So they might think to themselves, well, what the hell's the point? And that would be really, really, you'd be in panic stations then. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, with our Spend and Save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms and minimum spend apply.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
At TfL, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Huh. Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walker's. Delicious.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
But 9.13% fixed annual return with Cufflink. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest, property-backed from £500. Hard not to agree. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to auto-invest and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA. Visit cufflink.com. Some for full T's and C's.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60
60 973. 10:48 is the time. You remember when one of the professional... what's a nice word for idiot that doesn't sort of sound repetitive? I don't know. Anyway, you remember the claims earlier this week that a charity crew rowing for charity were actually illegal immigrants poised to land in Great Yarmouth, having undertaken a truly extraordinary journey from Calais in a rowing boat. There's another one, this time in Wales. It's not one of Farage's mates. I can't keep up with whether they're still mates or whether they've fallen out or whether they're back in touch again or whether they're friends. But anyway, one of the people Farage brought into Parliament alongside the bloke who got locked up for battering his ex-girlfriend, but they're very strong on safety for women, apart from, of course, when they're putting men who've been locked up for battering their girlfriends in the actual House of Commons without telling the voters that put him there about his record. But hey-ho, you know, that's just locker room talk. I found another story today. Well, I didn't find it. So it's probably bang in front of you as well, which shows a little bit more about the atmosphere that these people are creating. And the victims of it this time were not fully grown adults, including a former Royal Marine, undertaking a grueling rowing challenge for charity. The victims were rather more... I wouldn't say fragile necessarily, but anyway, I'll share details of that with you shortly. We might need a new thing. The problem is I don't want to make light of this. People telling lies about our country in order to make other people frightened. I should probably play you that little clip about Farage telling people what he does at the moment when it comes to selling fear. I don't want to make a comedy feature out of that because they're making life worse for everybody, not just the people in the buildings that they tried to set fire to or besiege, but essentially for everybody, because you're either a victim of the ignorant hatred or you are a victim of the ignorant hatred by dint of having fallen for it. It's a direct consequence of what happens when people in the public eye subscribe to this school of thought.
Anyone that thinks politics isn't about sales doesn't understand politics. You know, it is about sales. Of course it is. It's about selling ideas. It's about selling ideas. It's about selling hope. It's about sometimes selling fear. I mean, they're the things that make politics work.
Could you imagine Winston Churchill or Gordon Brown, depending on what your politics are, describing politics as being all about sales and about selling fear? It's a scout troop now that's on the receiving end of the consequences of the sale of fear that fella has undertaken on an industrial scale recently, and I'll share more details with you shortly. But back to matters Ukrainian and the question of why Donald Trump persists in blaming Volodymyr Zelensky for the invasion of his own country, or at least for the war that followed. And, you know, there's some good answers to the question. Mendoza's perhaps being top of the tree so far. The simple human pettiness of Trump, the petty vendetta of Zelensky refusing to break international law and being prepared to forego $400 million worth in congressionally mandated aid because Trump was demanding that he do stuff for him in order to receive the congressionally mandated aid. Could it really be that simple? Donut's a nice one. I don't know about plonker, Simon. I think that might have connotations, but donut is a nice one. Problem with rude words that aren't the rudest words you can use is that sometimes they can sound a bit affectionate. So plonker makes everybody think of Rodney in Only Fools and Horses, and that's said with great affection by Del Boy. So no, I don't know. Maybe the same with donut. I'll find one. Etty's in Kentish Town. Etty, what would you like to say?
You could try Egypt, maybe, just
a nice bit of Irish. Yeah, okay, yeah. Maybe. Carry on.
So I also think that it's very personal with Trump. So he started off not liking Zelensky because of that investigation. Mm. I think he probably thinks of him as quite a weak man. He's more allied with Europe. And I think it's really interesting that he doesn't blame Ukraine. He blames Zelensky.
Yeah, that's true.
It's incredibly personal. And I think also if you look at him again as a businessman and a real estate businessman, he doesn't have a nuanced understanding of geopolitics or of history or anything. So slightly in his defence, he looks at people dying and thinks, well, why won't we just end this war? Guys, you just need to sit around the table, have a chat and get it done with. And because he doesn't like Zelensky as a person, and he does like, Putin as a person, he comes down on the side of Putin. It's not on the side of Russia. It's on the side of the stronger man. And he's just saying, you know, guys, can we just please sit down and get this done?
And it also, it's not a peculiar definition of strength, but it is a specific definition of strength, because it was very strong of Zelensky to A, refuse the US president's strong arming over $400 million of aid, and B, resist the invasion by Vladimir Putin when other leaders would have been on the first jet out of Kyiv. And I think Putin was expecting Zelensky to be on the first jumbo jet out of Kyiv. So it's a brutal strength, isn't it? It's the strength you have when you have ended up in charge of large numbers of people. It's not an individual strength. It's not a personal strength. It's not courage or integrity or valor. It's just I've got you know, I'm a big boy and I want your dinner money, and that's strength.
And I think he'd also just already decided that he didn't like Zelensky. Mm. Therefore, it didn't really matter what Zelensky did afterwards. He'd already framed it in that way in his mind. And that was what he got impeached for, essentially.
Yes, it was. Time. Because I've often wondered, I'm sorry to sound simplistic, but I often think of Rocky. And I think it's Rocky IV. Is it Rocky IV or Rocky III when he fights the Russian? And that was emblematic of the Cold War and the popular depiction of the Cold War for American audiences. Russia was absolutely the baddie, you know. And Trump somehow bypassed that. So he didn't absorb those lessons of popular culture. He didn't absorb the lessons of Rambo and Rocky or War Games or all of the canon of films and popular entertainment that cast Russia during the Cold War as an absolutely intractable foe. And I used to be puzzled by that, but the answer to that has probably popped up this hour as well, in that if he is the you know, he's not a particularly good businessman in most senses of the word, but he was effective at achieving certain things. And if he could only continue to achieve those things with Russian money behind him, then that's why he doesn't subscribe to any of the historic depictions of Russia as being untrustworthy and aggressive. He kind of owes them and likes them, whereas Zelensky, who's never given him anything, he neither likes nor trusts.
Again, though, it's not necessarily... He might actually dislike the Cold War depiction of Russia, but he doesn't talk about Russia. He talks about Putin.
Yes, that's true.
He's not seeing them as countries. And I think, actually, if you look at China, he's a bit more conflicted. Mm. Because he does sometimes talk about China, and he does sometimes talk about Xi. When he talks about Xi, he quite likes the fellow. When he talks about China, he doesn't. But he sees Russia now and Ukraine as so far removed from Putin and Zelensky, respectively, that he's not viewing them as countries. He's viewing them as individuals doing a transaction, and can we just sit around the table and get it done, and my man's this one.
Yeah, I like that. And I don't know whether it gets filed under we've got to stop overthinking everything, or whether it gets filed under, oh, you have been thinking deeply about this and I like the conclusions you've arrived at, but the language he uses supports your position. He sees everything. Well, I don't know whether you're aware of this, Etty, but you are echoing the thoughts of Yuval Noah Harari, the historian, philosopher and author, but best known probably for Sapiens, an extraordinary book. And he wrote recently, and I shared it with you at the time, in the Trumpian vision, the world is seen as a zero-sum game in which every transaction involves winners and losers. The movement of ideas, goods and people is therefore inherently suspect. In other words, if the transaction is mutually beneficial, it's inherently suspect. There is only winning and losing, prevailing and failing. Tariffs being an example of where you can end up if you subscribe to such a sort of binary worldview. In Trump's world, international agreements, organizations and laws cannot be anything but a plot to weaken some countries and strengthen others. Or perhaps a plot to weaken all countries and benefit a sinister cosmopolitan elite. So he looks at Putin and he sees a winner. Here's a guy who's invaded countries. He looks at Zelensky and he sees a loser. Here's a guy who got invaded and also refused to help me when I tried to blackmail him illegally last time I was president. So, you know, we're an hour into this conversation. I think any notion of it being a mystery why Trump favours Putin over Zelensky has been comprehensively debunked. Let's go to Theo, who is in Crouch End at the moment, but spends a lot of time in Kyiv reporting on this, on the reality of what's going on the ground. What made you pick up the phone today, Theo?
Good morning. Well, I wanted to build on some of the excellent things that have been said by many of your callers, and I'm not going to go back over them. But another aspect to this is, you know, the internal politics of the United States. Trump needs something that he can tout as a quote-unquote win.
Yes.
And it's simply much easier in his eyes to force or attempt to force. He doesn't have as much pull on Ukraine as I think he thinks he does. A Ukrainian capitulation or, you know, frozen conflict, than it is to help Ukraine win. That is difficult. That will take a long time, a lot of resources, and some sacrifice on the part of the U.S. economy, and he's completely unwilling to do that.
So objective, what is the objective? Make me look good to the American voter. Yeah. How is that most easily achieved? Ceasefire ASAP, regardless of consequences or reality. Can I sell it to the U.S. public as an achievement on my part, even if it involves throwing Ukraine under a bus and bigging up Putin to a hideous degree? Yes, I can. Therefore, I'll do it.
Yeah, and that adds to all of the things that have been said before about him being a bully, about him favoring the so-called strongman. I was interviewing Professor Mark Galeotti, who's a well-known Kremlin watcher expert on this stuff. And Putin is not actually a particularly strong leader. He dithers, he prevaricates, he avoids making decisions. You saw this when the Ukrainians started their incursion into Kursk. He didn't make much in the way of any decisions quickly. He palmed it off to the local governors of the oblast, and he's actually dead now in somewhat mysterious circumstances. And
he didn't fall out of a window, did he, Theo?
No. He may have shot himself.
I see.
But it's an open question. And the same thing when Prigozhin started his mutiny. There wasn't much from Putin until he was able to get a speech. And you saw this. This is an example of the brittleness of Russia's empire. And I must contradict something that was said earlier.
Yes.
Russia is an empire.
Yeah,
it isn't an empire.
The caller said America is the only empire, but we're somewhat overlooking the fact that Russia is the only one that's invaded a sovereign territory in the last few years, which is the ultimate.
Well, not only that, but if you look at the map of the Russian Federation and the different ethnic groups that make it up, you know, you've got Buryats, Tatars, Ichkerians, Siberians, and there are growing independence movements from each of these regions because the imperial center in Moscow and Petersburg has been extracting resources and wasting lives at an enormous rate, especially since 2022. I remember.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely. You made me late for the news. We will talk again, I'm sure. And you can fill me in on when you're heading back out there and what the situation you're likely to find and what changes might have come about in that situation as a consequence of Friday's meeting. At the moment, I'd suggest not much. The key question remains, really, how much of the space that Trump is vacating will Europe be able to fill in time for Ukraine? It's 11:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, President Zelensky has thanked European leaders for backing Ukraine's territorial integrity. A joint EU statement issued this morning ahead of Donald Trump's summit with Vladimir Putin says the country's borders cannot be redrawn by force. The US president is due to meet his Russian counterpart in Alaska on Friday. The Spectator's Lisa Hasseldine has told LBC that a resolution feels unlikely.
To be perfectly honest, I don't see Alaska playing out well for Ukraine at all. Putin has always made clear that he wants to keep hold of Ukrainian territory. And from the very beginning of the war, Ukraine has said that it will not cede any territory, despite perhaps a last minute small softening from Zelensky potentially. Those two positions don't marry up.
The UK Health Security Agency's hot weather warnings have taken effect across England. Amber alerts are in place in the East Midlands, West Midlands, East of England, London and the South East until Wednesday. It means there could be significant impacts on transport, health and care services. Ministers have reportedly lined up an insolvency firm to prepare for the potential failure of Thames Water. It could be appointed if the water company, which has debts of nearly £20 billion, fails to secure a private sector bailout. The government says Thames Water remains financially stable, but it's ready for all eventualities. Tenants of a block of flats in East London say they are being plagued by rats, despite complaining for a year. Footage seen by LBC shows the rodents scurrying inside the walls of the building near Bethnal Green. Our reporter Helen Hodinott has the exclusive story.
The sound of a swarm of rats scuttling up a wall in the bin room of a block of flats, through a hole in the ceiling and disappearing deep into the building. The block of flats in East London is run by housing association Notting Hill Genesis. And when I visited last week, I saw scaly tails hanging down from the hole in the bin room ceiling and a dead rat under a takeaway box. Notting Hill Genesis has now instructed pest controllers who have started a programme of treatment for the building.
The Housing Association has apologised and you can see that exclusive footage on the LBC app. Economists say the latest unemployment data points to a further cooling of the jobs market. The UK's jobless rate remained at 4.7% in the 3 months to June. That's a four-year high, alongside a fall in vacancies. Earnings growth remained at 5% over the quarter. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 91.51. That's up 21. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather hot and sunny for most parts of the country. A bit cloudier with some showers further north. A high of 34 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free, online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC, from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 11:05 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I want to do a phone-in about builders. I've got two phone-ins. You know that I used to be a builder, don't you? I've shared that story with you, I think, in the past. I know it's quite hard to believe. But there you go. Don't ever judge a book by its cover. The one I really liked earlier in the week was one that is yet more evidence of me never knowing a news story, even when it slaps me around the face. It's about a growing online craze, almost, for people in the construction industries to complain about customers. I really like this. It's my algorithms. I haven't got to the bottom of algorithms. I'm not sure that I ever will. But generally speaking, my algorithms are fairly benign on social media. Do you know, would you like to know what I'm getting at the moment? I went through a period of getting people falling over a lot. You know, those collections of people slipping, and they were all quite nice, and you could tell that no one had done themselves serious harm. But then things began to take a bit of an unpleasant turn, and I was being sent clips of things that you couldn't really tell whether the person who'd fallen off a roof was safe or had broken both their legs and things. So I began to click on the "no more of this, please, chaps" button. So my accidents, my banana skin, the banana skin element of my algorithms began to disappear. It's been replaced by, very gratifyingly, because I can watch these till the cows come home at the moment, reunions, largely of American servicemen and women surprising their children. I don't understand how that works. Do you come back from a deployment? Some of them will be staged. Please don't ruin it for me. But they come home and they're like at the back of the PE class, or they lean over their shoulder in a photograph, and the kids don't realise that dad's back from the war or from military service until the, you know, the mum shows them the phone and says, look, this is a nice photo. Daddy's in the background. And I love them. And they always play the same song over the top of it as well. And so my algorithms deliver that. They also, thank you to Tiago for paying attention. They also send me quite a lot of table tennis content, because I just like table tennis content. There's no mystery here. So I read all these things and I do phone-ins about, oh, the algorithms are dragging us all into a hellscape of racism and pornography. And I'm watching people fall over, people come back from war and surprise their children, and table tennis content. And the other one that's popping up quite a lot now on my Facebook is the sites that are dedicated to giving tradesmen a space in which they can complain about customers. And it's really funny. But I took an executive decision yesterday that I wouldn't be able to get an hour out of it. I could be wrong. If I'm reliable on any subject, it's probably the subject of what works on the radio and what doesn't. But I'm not sure I can get an hour out of problem is, then I start talking about it off air, and people in the office have got stories. So a famous person who shall not be named forbade tradesmen working on their house from using the toilet in the house. It was just said, you're not allowed to, and they were building an extension outside. But he also, or she, they also refused to stump up for a portaloo. So these lads were supposed to somehow make their own lavatorial arrangements in a part of town they didn't know at all. That is one example of what might pop up on these websites. The other, of course, is someone saying, I need a fence putting up by 4 o'clock on Friday. I'll give you 150 quid. I've worked it out, and you shouldn't need more than that, and we'll go halves on so you can see what I mean. I'm not going to get a phone in out of that. In fact, I'm not even getting a phone in out of this. Max has been in touch to say, I love you, James, but what the hell are you babbling about? Mate, have you listened to this show before? This is a feature, not a glitch. This is a crucial part of our time together, involves me doing a little bit of babbling. So that might be a side order this hour. Builders are cowboy customers, in fact. So but that's not, I'm not doing that. Stop it. Stop talking about the subject that you're not actually going to do. Because the subject I am going to do is this one. More than 40,000 future builders, bricklayers, electricians, carpenters and plumbers will get cutting-edge skills. Can you tell that I'm reading a Department for Education press release as opposed to a news story? To get Britain building at state-of-the-art technical excellence colleges. 10 colleges up and down the country, England alone, in every region of England, to deliver the workforce needed to turbocharge the building of new homes, schools and hospitals, helping to realise every Brit's dream of owning their own home. And I find this fascinating for a number of reasons, one of which might surprise you. So 20 years ago, and listen, I'm joking when I say I used to be a builder. I've got friends in the trade, and I worked for one of them when I was 16, family friend, for a fortnight in South Yorkshire. So my experience of the building trade is both 37 years out of date and very, very brief in the first. But all I can tell you is that I have never been so tired in my life. I have never been so physically exhausted as I was when I spent 2 weeks working on a building site in South Yorkshire. And I was not quite in my prime. I was 16. I was probably a few years off my prime. Still am. But the sheer physical graft of it was extraordinary. A couple of things looking back that I can't remember. I remember being confused by. And this isn't a phone in either, but why would, so the lads were all quite ordinary looking. One of them was a bit tubby. One of them was a bit skinny. They were, and I would have thought if I had been doing that kind of graft every day, so for several hours a day, I'd have thought I'd be like an Adonis. Why don't all builders look like the blokes in the Diet Coke adverts, given the absolute graft and exercise and energy that they expend every single day? Just a sort of little thing that I remember being a little bit confused by. I don't think I grew any muscles in the space of 2 weeks. I had never done as much heavy lifting. I remember once having to shovel. I was shoveling stuff all day. It turned out it wasn't really a day's work for anybody else, but it was a day's work for me. And at one point, I was in so much pain around my midriff, like where you get a stitch, that the foreman said, I've got a weightlifting belt in the van. Do you want to borrow it? And I said, why would I want to borrow a weightlifting belt? It just tightens everything up. We wear them sometimes when we're doing like a big, thick belt. I didn't really make a blind bit of difference, but I thought I'd join in. And 20 years ago, 30 years ago, if you were in the construction trade, I think you would have discouraged your son or daughter from following you into it, right? Because it is back-breaking work. This is the thing that we sometimes underestimate when we're talking in slightly dewy-eyed middle-class ways about why don't we have any bricklayers anymore? Or why do we have to bring all our builders in from overseas? Or why don't we have more carpenters homegrown? Why can't we train our own? And to that, I'd say, normally I'd say, just think of a cold February when you're working on a roof. But actually, imagine doing outdoor work at the moment. It's a blooming great heat wave washing up and down the country. I played a bit of tennis at 7 o'clock yesterday afternoon and I must have lost half a stone in sweat alone. Imagine if you were actually doing physical work in the outdoor heat at the moment. And then, you know, if that isn't enough to put you off it for life, imagine doing it when it's freezing outside, when it's, you know, two degrees below. And then you've got the graft of it and the danger and the injuries and the pain, the physical pain. I don't know that I admire anybody in the private sector more than I admire the building trade, because I admire people who do physical graft. It's the sort of polar opposite of my job. And that's why I'm very interested by this story, because the government is backing and indeed betting £100 million on there being a long queue of British boys and girls, but it's mostly going to be young men, who will want to work in this sector. And where they will be able to secure good, well-paid jobs. We touched on this yesterday, and I'm really frightened of it as a subject. But probably better paid jobs and more secure jobs than their middle-class mates are going to get with their degrees. And I say that largely because of AI. So I look around this building sometimes and wonder how many people are going to be replaced by AI and how soon. And I look at the lists of jobs that degree-educated kids, not just middle class, of course, degree-educated young people would normally have on their wish list. And they seem to me to be by far the most vulnerable to AI. So if you're looking for a good whack and job security, I don't know that I want to say this out loud, but I'm going to. I wonder whether skilled manual labour in the course of the next cycle of our time together, not like decades hence, but in the next generational cycle, skilled labour is going to become one of the most desirable jobs in the country. I really do. This incredible shift from having nobody here that wants to do it, therefore we have to invite people in from places like Poland and other continental European countries, and then treat them very, very badly and insist that they all leave after a ludicrous referendum. You know what I'm like when I knit things together. We've talked about AI quite a lot. We've talked about degrees quite a lot. We've talked about young people who aren't in work quite a lot. We've talked about the lack of infrastructure in this country quite a lot. And we haven't talked much about the construction trade. But today's the opportunity to knit together all five stories. You know more about this industry than I do. Would you recommend it to your son? 0345 6060973. Straight up question. With the caveat or the proviso that these specialist colleges work, that this £100 million investment signals a major improvement. You know that the government's committed to building 1.5 million homes. You know that there are labour shortages in almost every sector of the construction industry. You know that there is now almost a political consensus on rejecting foreign labour, whether it's for racist reasons or not. It doesn't matter for the purposes of today's conversation. We have not been a country that provided its own construction workers for generations. We've still got plenty. Looking at the job, looking at the future, and looking at the prospects, would you want your son to do it? So if you are, this is where I go all Phil Mitchell and pretend that I know what I'm saying. If you're a Sparky, if you're an electrician or a builder, a bricklayer, a carpenter or a plumber, would you want your son or daughter to follow you into that profession? I don't think it's snobbish of me to say that when I flirted with this industry myself, most of the lads that I worked with wanted their children to go to university and pursue a, well, basically an indoor desk job, or at least a job that didn't involve epic physical graft and often quite nasty injuries, even with health and safety. Would you want your child to follow you into this industry? And do you see where I'm coming from? Do you sense the pendulum is swinging? The wheel is turning. The world is changing. That it, you might not have said this 20 years ago, but you, I mean, I don't know how much of us know enough about AI to comment, but you know the future is going to be very, very different. And I reckon you've got a few more decades before you've got the physical AI or robots replacing building workers. Would you recommend it for your child now in a way that perhaps you wouldn't have done 10 or 20 years ago? Are you surprised to find yourself thinking that you want your boy to follow you into this business if he can get the kind of training that this so-called, this technical excellence college scheme is designed to deliver? I really want to know, okay? 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need. And if you're not remotely involved in the construction trade, even less involved than me, what do you reckon? But you know a lot about AI. Oh, yeah, that would be interesting. An AI expert who's looking at the world and thinking, do you know what? I'm probably going to encourage my son to become a builder. That would be the jackpot today, but I will be able to tell if you're yanking my chain or pulling my leg. It's 11:19.
LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from Real Octopus Energy Calls.
I've dealt with many utility companies for many years across several properties, and Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddie.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centerline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required, terms apply, see website.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
21 minutes after 11 is the time. 40,000 people to get skills in new technical excellence colleges. I don't think it was snobbish 20 years ago, if you worked with your hands, to want your son or daughter. I did say or daughter a few times, but it's going to be mostly men in this sector. To follow you into the trade. You wanted your child to do something less physically exerting. I wonder if that's changing. And I wonder, well, it's going to have to change with regard to AI, but I wonder whether it's changing for you as someone in the front line of these industries who is actually now thinking, do you know what, maybe my kids should follow me into it. 22 minutes after 11 is the time. Eamon is in Hastings. Eamon, what made you pick up the phone?
How are you doing, James?
I'm all good, Eamon. What's on your mind?
No, well, I felt absolutely compelled to call in for a few simple reasons that...
I listen to you every day, and thanks for keeping me sane.
Well, that's very kind. How do I know it's true? How do I know yours? You don't sound sane to me. You sound as mad as a box of frogs.
I know I'm as sane as any other villa you'll find out there, I'm telling you.
Okay, then.
But it's, my son is 10.
Yeah.
I have two other sons, twins, they're 8. Unfortunately, one of them has cerebral palsy.
Oh, okay.
But that's why, like, as a self-employed carpenter, electrician, we're always busy, but
yeah,
trying to find lads to come in there's just no interest. Now, it's the summer holidays, my boy is here working, and he's 10, and keep him engaged. Years ago, I wouldn't have dreamt of letting him near Villainside.
Sure, but you've got him with you today. I don't know if we're breaking health and safety laws here, Eamon. I don't want to get you into any trouble. John, I don't want to get you into any trouble, Albert.
Oh, no, he's fine. He's just doing a bit of sweeping up there. So it's a private job. It's only a small job that we're on. So.
Fair enough.
But
I like that. And he's probably having more fun than he would be if he was stuck at home. But if he turned to you at 16 and said, I want to do what you do, Dad, what would you say?
I'd say you're doing it whether you like it or not.
So he's just going to follow you into the business. That's what you want him to do.
Well, I want him to do it now, because if he gets a decent skill, like a scarp, even if he doesn't want to do electrical or carpentry, plumbing, anything, or any skill.
Yes.
20 years from now, I hope to be retired in 20 years. I'm really 40.
Don't we all, Eamon? John.
And if I can impart my knowledge to him, he'll have a better start than I did. Now, I grew up, my dad wasn't around.
I'm sorry.
So my granddad had to, my grandfather stepped in, and he was an electrician, and I tried to walk in his steps, if you know what I mean.
Of course.
And he always said, if you're not academic, not everyone's academic, right, go out and get a trade, because if you're always busy, you'll always have money, you'll always be able to keep a roof over your head, you'll always be able to provide for your family.
Hmm?
And family is everything. That's the most important thing. And I'm looking at the young fella there now. I'm up on the roof. He's down on the roof. He's just busy. And when he's busy, he's not in trouble. He doesn't like school, right? So I've had a couple of issues with school.
Sure.
But he's busy. But I know for a fact that he's not the most academically minded, but he's clever.
Right. First of all, let me say this to you. It's a bit early to be putting all the chips on the idea that he's not academically minded. He just might not have had the right teacher yet, or it could take him a couple of years before he blossoms.
That's true, because
you're looking out for him, which means he's already got an advantage in life that a lot of 10-year-old boys won't have. He's got a dad who's got his best interests at heart, is keeping a close eye on things and isn't going to let him slip through the cracks. About 5 years ago, say, if I'd said to you then, would you let your lad follow you into the trades? What would you have said 5 years ago?
Well, he's grown up. Like, he was 5 then, he's 10 now.
Well, no, I don't mean today. I don't mean would you have brought a 5-year-old onto the building site. I mean...
No, I don't mean it like that. No. I mean, if you look at the way the world has changed so rapidly...
Well, that's what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, look at AI. I mean, as you said earlier on in the show, the skilled labour.
What is the job?
People are going to look for skilled labour, because the whole country is awash with unskilled labour.
Yes, it is. If he's got his proper qualifications as an electrician, what would be the best one, do you think? Looking around when you're on a site and you see the people, is there a hierarchy? Who's at the top?
If you're looking at the top, now you're talking about electricians and plumbers, if you're talking about skilled.
Yeah.
And then you got carpenters are in the middle of everything, because the carpenter essentially, but you believe it or not, most site managers actually starts off as carpenters, because they're in the middle of every trade.
Yes, of course.
From the ground workers to the lad snagging at the end. There's a carpenter in the middle.
And finally, what about the physical side of it? What about the absolute toll that it takes on your body? I got a couple of messages. The knees seem to feature pretty heavily that conk out earlier than they would do if you were an accountant.
James, as I said, I'm nearly 40, and if you want to see the state of my back in the morning...
and that's it. So, again, society would need to... I don't want to see the state of your back morning, noon or night, Eamon, thank you very much. But I take your point. You'd want to... That society's going to have to adjust to this. You know, the idea that some jobs need different terms and conditions from other jobs. I got that crash course when firefighters were taking industrial action over attempts to change their pensions, and they explained to me... Thing is, James, I could carry you out of a building when I was 35, but I probably couldn't do it when I was 60, and that's why we shouldn't be treated. But again, these are conversations that grow from the one that we're having. I love the fact. Thank you, Eamon. That was so nice to talk to you and to hear the clear love that you have for your boy and the change in the society around you, changing the things that you think he might be doing in the future. But I also love the fact that enough people have been listening to this programme for enough time now that I've got about a dozen messages saying, don't say grand, James, don't say grand. Because for reasons I don't fully understand, every time I speak to somebody with an Irish accent, I find myself saying grand. But I didn't then. Go me. Craig's in Brentwood. Craig, what would you like to say?
Hiya. Hey, James. It's just to say that, obviously, on the conversation over about bringing your... I've got a reasonable-sized construction firm.
Yes.
And my middle son, I encouraged him to go through the university part. Never took him in, never wanted him to touch the industry, and he's just finished his law degree now. Yeah?
Yeah.
And I've got a 15-year-old son as well now that I'm more inclined to pull into the business.
Is that because they're different or because the world is different?
There's a bit of both, and there's a difference... in, I think, obviously, the perspectives to what he's going to possibly earn as a lawyer in not in a major city, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And the younger one and the possibility of what can be earned. But it's getting past the stigma of being a tradie, if you see what I mean.
That, of course I do.
And sometimes, even for myself, even though I'm sort of smartly dressed, but I might have a pair of scruffs on, you're put up against certain people and then automatically assume that you're beneath them. If you see what I mean, because...
Are you sure? Because I love the old phrase, I'm not paranoid, they really are out to get me. Can you think of, and I don't want to put you on the spot, give me something that'll sing, where you know that you are being, you're a victim of a form of snobbery.
Well, basically, sometimes, obviously, like many years ago, when you used to, like, go into some estate agents or somewhere like that, just because they've got a suit on, they automatically assume that you're beneath them and they're earning, as a monetary value, that they can talk to you in what tone they... agreed to speak to you in.
Yeah. No, of course.
Now, but with a lot of tradies nowadays, some of them are earning 60k to 100k plus per year.
Which is more than a lot of lawyers and accountants are going to earn when they graduate from
university.
Exactly
that. Yeah. But for us trying to get in apprentices at the moment, we go through them and have to let them go. The lads have to let them go after 2 days because they're coming in, they're worried about how their trainers are getting dirty or something, and there's just not the influx. And to agree with what the man was just saying before, that we say about, you know, getting these people in and AI and everything else, and I do agree with you completely that I think, obviously, the construction industry is a, you would assume, is a pretty AI-safe place to be.
Yeah.
But I just think in this country...
Kids aren't ready. It doesn't matter how many schemes and colleges you've got in place if the young people aren't being raised in a way or just don't fancy it. And you wouldn't, would you, Craig? I mean, if you're hand on heart, would you rather be on a roof all day or in an office?
Well, I think there is that thing that I always push that I wanted my kids to go on a train from Brentwood into central London, press a few buttons on the computer, earn $100,000 a year and get back on that train and come back out again.
Sounds a good one. Yeah, nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, but, you know, it's just not that way anymore. No, and I just think the children, like the kids coming into it, if you know what I mean, there's not the work ethic there. And you have to be, within reason, a certain type of person to be a contractor. Yeah, because as you just said, in the extremes, in the hot and in the cold, it's hard work, like mentally.
Yeah,
if you see what I mean.
Yeah, and physically.
Yeah. And we're just not putting names.
And that's the other part. That's why I said I've got five strands. I hope both boys do you proud. I'm sure they will, Craig. And again, listening to dads who've got their children's interests so front and centre is just a nice experience, isn't it, sometimes, to be reminded that most of us are decent and living in a country that we love and that is quite a nice place to be in when so much of the media is dedicated to claiming the opposite. And indeed, to that end, we're going to do a very big missed information later in this hour on precisely that question about perceptions of criminality. But I think that is a great phrase, isn't it? AI proof. These jobs are AI proof. Great. That's a big win. But the young people who are of an age to take advantage of the AI proofness are not equipped with whatever it is they need to do so. And I don't like these, you know, I don't like these conversations about young people lacking stuff, but it is a recurring theme. And I am not going to remind you of the story of my friend who's a hairdresser and the young woman whose neighbour's just got a cat, because I've told it too many times to bear. Here's Thomas Watts instead with the headlines.
Donald Trump is facing growing pressure from European leaders to defend Ukraine's interests at Friday's summit with Vladimir Putin. A statement from all EU states except Hungary says the path to peace cannot be decided without Kiev. Ministers have reportedly lined up an insolvency firm to prepare for the potential failure of Thames Water. It could be appointed if the water company, which has debts of as high as £20 billion, fails to secure a private sector bailout. The UK Health Security Agency's hot weather alerts have taken effect across England. They warn of significant impacts to transport, health and care services. It's staying hot and sunny for most, with cloudier conditions further north, a high of 34 degrees.
This is LBC.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centreline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
Swollen gums, bad breath, bleeding whilst brushing. All signs of potential gum disease, a major cause of tooth loss. At Darwood & Tanner, our expert periodontists can help restore your gums and save your teeth. Using a range of cutting-edge procedures, from minimally invasive to advanced corrective surgery, we ensure that you are always in the best hands. For our most comprehensive, tailored and complete gum disease treatments, visit darwoodandtanner.co.uk.
Get a step closer to winning a huge £20,000. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Winplus, great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
Huh. Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walker's. Delicious.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 11:35. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Sometimes I just get two headlines in front of me, and I can't help seeing a link between them, even if possibly there isn't one. Europe builds for war as arms factories expand at triple speed. We spoke about that in the last hour in the context of Ukraine. Europe builds for war as arms factories expand at triple speed. And then 40,000 people to get skills in new technical excellence colleges. And they both speak, in fact, to an uptick in jobs what require manual labour, that what require physical, you know, factory work, albeit it's presumably quite highfalutin factory work, production lines in the context of military equipment, engineering and construction. I mean, you'd throw a few other things on the list as well. I'd include painting and decorating, which is very much skilled labour, as anyone who's ever had a bad painter or decorator could tell you. And landscaping as well, outdoor work, anything that is essentially physical labour but skilled. I wonder now, come here a minute, because I'm going to tell you something. I don't have, and a few people are cross with me for saying sons instead of daughters. I have said daughters a lot. And I'll try and for the rest of the show to say children, because I don't mean anything by it. It just is something that, for example, you would be more likely to consider for your son than your daughter, a career in construction. But I don't want to sound exclusionary or anything like that. So we'll try and say children. And if I slip, it's just a slip. So don't sue me. But if right now, knowing what I know about AI, oh, I'm thinking if it was the other way around, and I said to my dad 30 years ago, 40 years ago, say, when I was 13, oh, I want to be a journalist, my dad would have been encouraging. Well, he was. Yeah, that's a perfectly reasonable ambition. It's a good job. So do you want your child to follow you into the job that you do? Do you want to do... And to be honest with you, when the journalism wasn't working out, I was working in shops, working in a shop and thinking about turning that into a career. I remember saying to my mum, there's an area manager's job coming up and I've been turned down for every traineeship under the sun. I love retail. I'd love to work in retail. Probably safe in retail, but the rewards are nothing like they were back then. I'd lived in Soho on a West End shop wage. Can you believe that? Nice flat as well. I wasn't sort of living in a bus shelter. I lived in a decent flat just north of Soho, just the other side of Oxford Street. And working in a shop, it was wonderful. Really nice. I was not one of the people complaining about the noise in Soho at the time. I like to think of myself as a major contributor to much of the noise and mayhem at the time in that particular era of my life. So, you know, retail, not going to be affected by AI, but it hasn't really kept up in terms of pay with where it was when I was doing it for a living and able. I suppose property's gone bonkers as well, hasn't it? So it's all linked. But I'm pretty sure that if Dad was a journalist now, and he was one of the tiny number that had managed to cling on to terms and conditions that were objectively attractive, as opposed to the massive majority of people in this industry who don't earn anything like what we earned when we were their age, I don't know that Dad would encourage me to do it, to be honest with you. You can't say I'm going to be a talk show host. That's like saying I'm going to be a footballer. It's just nuts, isn't it? It's so few of us. I'm going to go into journalism and see where it takes me. I don't know that Dad, if either of my daughters said it to me now, I don't know that I would encourage them to do it, depending on what they wanted and how much we were prioritizing security. And if I had boys, I would perhaps, and if like Eamon, I'd thought they're not academic, I'd be thinking, if you want job security and you want a decent scratch, you should probably have a think about some training, some vocational training. And then, of course, the problem pops up that a lot of young people who might think that they fancy it turn up for a couple of days and it turns out that they can't. 11:39 is the time. David is currently winning the competition to have paid the most attention to my anecdotes over all the years that we've spent together. He's pointed out I also did a year or 6 months at River Island in Worcester. So I'm not kidding. I really like retail. But anyway, I digress. Back to the building work, back to the physical work, the skilled labour. What do you want for your children? And is it changing as AI becomes ever more relevant? Martin is in Loughborough. Martin, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
Just had to come in on this one because of my experience in the building trade.
Yeah.
So I've actually worked in two different trades, actually. I've worked in the roofing industry, which was absolutely brutal, especially in the summertime. And you've got the summertime, you've got the hot, sunny days. But then you've also got the winter, you've got the cold weather up on the roof.
I wouldn't fancy that.
No. And then after the roofing trade, I actually got myself into gas engineering.
Okay.
So I've been a gas engineer.
I'll tell you what, Martin, the Drifters have got a lot to answer for, haven't they? That song Up on the Roof makes it sound lovely. It makes it sound like an absolutely wonderful time to spend a few hours. But goodness me, it's backbreaking work.
But it is not. It is absolutely not. And where I am now, I mean, I'm currently now, so I'm not in any trades now. I'm actually working as a driving instructor.
Okay.
And I'm actually finding out of all the jobs that I've done in my life, this is the job that I've enjoyed the most.
Okay, that's nice.
It's just so rewarding. But going back to the trades, I kind of feel as though the roofing work has left me with, well, I've had a skin cancer on my back, which was safely removed.
Good.
And then in the heating industry, it's kind of left me with so many skeletal issues. After the news was playing there, there's an advert that plays, I think, was it for Voltrol or something, but some pain relief cream,
right.
And there's a guy going, and that sounds like...
Are you auditioning, Martin? I could put a call into the advertising department if you want.
Yeah, I'll take the job. But that sounds like me all the time. I've got so many aches and pains, and I think that's probably a combination of doing the roofing work and doing the heating engineering, because as a heating engineer, I just used to work on my own. I didn't have anybody working with me.
It's physical. I mean, we're not, I mean, you know, we can, the evolutionary conversation always fascinates me. We're not even meant to walk on two legs. Our bodies aren't really built for that, let alone doing the kind of exertion that you're describing. So how does this sound? I mean, do you have children? Do you have children yourself?
I do, yeah.
What do you want for them?
I'm of that age now where I've actually got grandchildren. But like with my son, after school, he came out with me when I was doing the heating work, and he came out and he gave me a hand on a couple of jobs. And I said to him at the end of it, what do you think then? Do you think you could get into this? And my son was just like, yeah, it's not for me, Dad. And he's now working as a civil servant for HMRC.
Well, we're always going to need them.
Yeah.
Although it's probably more AI vulnerable than either any of the jobs you've done, all three of the jobs that you've done over the year.
Yeah, so now working as a driving instructor, I'm kind of thinking that I'm probably AI-proof doing this.
Yeah, I would have thought so. Until we don't need to be able to drive, until we've got the driverless cars, and then you're toast, Martin. Yeah. But I think we're old enough to get to the finish line before that kicks in. Can I ask you a question, if I may? Because the physical side of it, I think I've done a decent job of expressing it, and other people, Eamon and you and others, when you see essentially middle-class politicians encouraging other people's children to become builders, bricklayers, electricians, carpenters, plumbers, heating engineers, whatever it may be, is there a naivety to some of these contributions to the conversation in that they're completely overlooking the fact that by the time you're 40, 45, 50, you're going to be, as a consequence of doing this, you're probably going to be physically compromised?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think it's, I don't know, what can I say about it? I mean, yeah, it's not unreasonable to encourage people to go into the trades. There is good money to be made. But you've just got to think about the long-term effects, what you're going to be in. I mean, going into the trades in your 20s is one thing, but I know now, as a 58-year-old male, that I can't stand another 10 years of doing the kind of work that I have been doing.
Yeah, no, and yet your outgoings will not reflect that timescale. It's I keep thinking of the firefighters, but of course they had a strong union and they were in the public sector, so they could have pensions and terms and conditions that recognise the unique nature or the specific nature of their work. Most of us don't have that. Thank you, Martin. I would absolutely recommend, writes Rob, the construction or gardening industry to my kids. I used to be a film editor and then I worked in wine sales. I left all that behind and became a gardener. It pays well, the hours are great, and AI isn't coming near my job anytime soon. Well, it might on the garden design, just to be a party pooper, but of course that's not necessarily a part of what you do or a big part of what you do, but the old kind of, you know, laying out the gardens and stuff like that is already quite computerised. Again, though, I don't know how old you are, Rob. When you're 60, will you want to be getting your shovel out and digging? There's a lot going on here, and I'm not going anywhere anytime soon, so we can have these conversations as the world continues to change or develop. Well, I say that, I'm off next week and the week after, but in terms of generational change, I've got a few more miles on the clock yet before I can hang up my headphones. 11:45 is the time. After this break, we're going to do a big misinformation with Emma Monk, who you've met before. She does a Substack called Monk Debunks, and she's a sort of a fact checker extraordinaire, and she's been having a proper look at some rather hysterical claims about criminality in this country, not just sadly confined anymore to the usual deeply, deeply dishonest political figures, but also to media outlets that would once, in fact, I'm speaking about my late father a moment ago, and he worked for one of them, that would once have been much better than they currently are. So stick around for that, whatever you do.
LBC, this morning, on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Shop thieves are staging increasingly brazen raids on pharmacies and police are failing to help, according to the National Pharmacy Association. An 88% increase in the theft of drugs and other medical supplies in the last 12 months. Atul Patel runs St. George's Pharmacy in London.
They basically just walk in while we're busy working, they'll swipe the shelf and go. The police don't do anything. By the time they even come round, it'd be 3 hours later after the event, and they're not interested at all.
Paul.
Cars in Sutton.
I work for it. I've been in it for 30 years. You see it all the time. Even like they jump over the counters in Tesco's. They've got no fear whatsoever.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the new LBC app.
You sound happy.
I've just spotted tuna in the fridge, and it's got my name all over it.
Well, be careful. It's a long way up.
Relax. We're insured, aren't we?
Nope. That's not what I've heard.
Because you never know what little pickles will get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Seriously, we're not insured.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They've got bags of offers and promotions kicking about.
Like what?
For a start, all them weekly promotions.
Oh, yeah?
There's the Loyalty Club, the BetVictor Predictor. And in Casino, they've got the Spinners Club, which is a weekly slot thingamajig. And you can also order food to your door.
Can you?
Oh, no, hang about. That's a different app.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Gamblerware.org.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
James O'Brien on LBC.
This is nice. 11:49 is the time. I don't read out surnames because WhatsApp sometimes shares them with me despite the person sending the message not wanting them to be sent. But hi, James. We were very disappointed, writes Barbara, when our very capable and clever son shunned the academic route in favour of a career in construction. He's a skilled, hard landscaper. And I can't tell you how proud we are of him and his work ethic, particularly on blisteringly hot days like today. He grafts away in all weather conditions and absolutely loves his job. And then, because mums are mums, aren't they? She adds, well done, Jamie. And I will say that too, as well. But Fred, unfortunately, is here to rain on everybody's parade when he points out, if you're starting your working life today, chances are you're going to be working till you're 70. And if it is therefore physical graft, if it's physical work, then have a little think about that. Before getting too excited about the government's proposals to train up 40,000 more builders, bricklayers, electricians, carpenters and plumbers. Emma Monk is a researcher, writer and scientist who is among the people who have drawn me ever more towards Substack, which is a kind of, how would you describe Substack? It's like a collection of contributors, all independent, but all in the same place, writing about a whole variety of things. So recently we've spoken to Sam and Lawrence Friedman about theirs. Ian Dunt writes a rather brilliant one. David Aranovich writes a very good one as well, the former Times columnist. I'm very much in the foothills of it, but enjoying it enormously. I share some others with you as the weeks pass. But Emma's is called Monk Debunks, which is quite nice because her name is Monk. And we have met before, and she kind of does in her Substack what we do under this professionally produced bit of radio.
Missed information.
Thank you, Emily. But we won't call it missed information today, Emma. We will call it Monk Debunks. The bad news is you don't get a jingle.
Yeah. That's fine.
Unless you want to do your own.
No, we're all good.
Quite right, too. You're a serious fact checker. You don't want to be singing around like Emily Maitlis, honestly. There's two headlines here. The online version of the story that we're going to look at says crime has got so bad in Britain that foreign governments are warning their citizens about visiting. But I think I saw the print version, or I certainly saw another version of the same story that went sort of further. The foreign governments warning citizens about the dangers of visiting crime-ridden Britain. Australia, France, Canada and even Mexico are advising their citizens to exercise caution when travelling to the UK. When it appears in a newspaper like The Telegraph. It's clearly designed to persuade their readers as they eat their toast and marmalade in the morning that they are, despite never having noticed it themselves, living in a country that has become profoundly and measurably more dangerous since the Labour government got into power, or perhaps more pertinently sometimes for these people, since Sadiq Khan became the mayor of London. You decided to have a little dig and perhaps head towards the truth of these claims as opposed to the headlines. What did you find?
I did, yes, thank you. It seemed unlikely that crime had got so bad that our foreign governments were actively warning their citizens against visiting. So I had a read of the article, and if you read the article, that's what you would be led to believe. They talked about that Australia had raised the travel advice from a level one to a level two, and there's only four levels, urging that you should exercise a high degree of concern if you came to the UK, and adding that petty crime is common, including pickpocketing. So I went to the Australian travel website, Smart Traveller, and yes, absolutely, they do say we are at level two, and they do urge a high degree of caution. But the reason is because of the threat of terrorism, not petty crime.
And when did they raise us to a level two? Presumably long after Keir Starmer became Prime Minister.
June 2022.
With a warning about the threat of terrorism as opposed to petty crime or the kind of stuff that these people are being encouraged to get very frightened about.
Okay. And that level has remained at level two since June 2022. France is on the same level also for the threat of terrorism. The warnings about pickpocketing and knife crime have been on that website since 2019. So nothing new.
So it's not, it's in a newspaper, but it's not news.
Yes, basically. They have updated on the front page where it says level two. It says we urge exercising a high degree of caution because of the ongoing threat of tourism and petty crime can be a problem in high volume areas.
So absolutely nothing's changed really since 2019. Except in 2024, when something happened on the streets of this country that also caused concern among the Australian authorities.
Yep. A new update was put out last summer about the problems with rioting and protests in the UK.
So that wasn't mentioned, I don't think, in the Daily Telegraph piece.
That was not mentioned by the Daily Telegraph.
The fears of getting caught up in the Farage riot. So that's Australia not fitting the category that the headline described. Where do you want to go next, Emma?
Okay, so this made me smile slightly. They claimed that a slew of countries...
A slew?
A slew. Good Lord. I had no idea things were so bad.
Carry on.
...had updated their warnings and... They found five.
Okay.
Canada, New Zealand, United Arab Emirates and Mexico. So Canada, similar idea. They said that we're level two out of four levels. They said that the Canadian website claims it's because of tourism, but, you know, who knows? Mm. Well, yeah, the Canadian website does show that in 2017, so even further back, they raised the UK to a level two, and it's because of the threat of terrorism. And that hasn't changed since 2017.
But again, this is being reported as news in the Daily Telegraph, and it happened in 2017.
It did,
and
yes.
They're positing Canada as part of the slew, are they?
Part of the slew, yes.
So that's 2017 and 2019 or 2022, both part of a slew that is being reported as new.
Indeed.
What are we to do? Over to you.
So New Zealand, nothing has changed on their website since 2024. I don't know when the level two came in then, because the source that I use to look back over time at these websites doesn't go back for New Zealand, but nothing's changed recently. United Arab Emirates, the website they're quoting was something that was put out in 2020.
Right.
And when the Telegraph quotes what's on the website, it says, you know, they're warning against, you know, to make sure you don't leave your bags unattended and to make sure there's a lock on your door. What they're actually quoting was the visitor information put out by the Met Police.
Yes. I mean, generally speaking,
travel information.
There can't be many places in the world where you're encouraged to leave your bags out unattended and indeed not to have locks on your doors.
No, exactly.
But a slew is a slew. What about Mexico, though? Because that, I mean, that's got Colonel choking on his marmalade written on. The bloody Mexicans are being warned to be careful when they come here. What's going on?
They were very excited that they could find somewhere on a Mexican website. Now, the quotes that they pulled, they put in quotes in the article. I can't find the website where they came from. I've asked various AIs and Googles and what have you. None of them seems to be able to find it. But their general Government of Mexico website starts with, the UK is a relatively safe country.
Oh.
And it then goes on to give general advice about not taking unlicensed taxis, keeping your belongings safe. It's all really standard travel advice that most of us have been following for decades if you travel anywhere, and that includes travelling to the UK.
Well, I mean, when is a slew not a slew? Where do we come on the global crime index, London in particular? I presume we're at the top, are we, given the excitement that the Daily Telegraph and others are constant, and indeed Nigel Farage's friends and colleagues are constantly describing London as... So we've got to be top 10.
Nope.
What?
On the global crime index that I looked at, we were 14th in Europe, or London was 14th in Europe. We were about 100th in the world.
Despite being huge.
Yeah.
Gosh. And you've also had a look at some other sort of slightly more level-headed tourism blogs and advisors. I quite like Carpe Diem Tours and what they had to say about our city.
Yes, I haven't got the exact quote.
London is as safe, if not safer, than most other global capitals.
Yes. Yes, and that the general advice, you know, is the general travel advice. You know, keep your belongings close, put things in a safe when you're in a hotel. You know, just generally watch out if you're in high, busy, touristy areas.
Don't be silly. And then, of course, finally, Emma, we've got the ONS crime statistics, which are rather helpful in this space as well. I don't know if you've got those in front of you.
I do have some, yes. That basically the most recent update shows that most crimes are down, excluding fraud. Fraud is up.
Of course. Which is often online, isn't it? It's largely online these days.
Homicide is the lowest it's been since 2014. Robberies, criminal damage, violence, they're all on a downward trajectory over the last 20 years. It's a really interesting read, if you like that sort of thing.
It is. How can people read your Substack?
They can search for Monk Debunks.
Monk
over on
Debunks,
Substack.
Which is a rival now, I think, but also an ally of...
Missed information.
Thank you, Emily, and thank you, Emma. And that is this week's or today's Monk Debunks / Missed Information. And you can read all about it. Read all about it! Robberies, criminal damage, violence have all fallen in the last 20 years. Homicides are the lowest they've been since 2014. Firearms offences are down. But we're all going to hell in a handcart and living in a tinderbox. One thing that has gone up, be under no illusions about this, is shoplifting. And I want to find out why after this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Ukraine's president has welcomed the backing of European leaders ahead of a US-Russia summit. A joint statement from EU countries says territorial integrity must be respected and international borders must not be changed by force. Donald Trump is due to meet Vladimir Putin in Alaska on Friday. Ukrainian MP Oleksiy Goncharenko has told LBC he is worried about the talks.
The worst possible scenario is if some conditions
will be agreed by President Trump and Russian dictator, which are not acceptable for Ukraine. And after this, Ukraine will refuse, and then we will lose American support. That's the worst possible scenario, both for Ukraine and Europe, and I think for the United States too. So that's my fears.
The government has reportedly appointed insolvency specialists in case Thames Water fails. Britain's largest water firm, which has a debt pile of nearly £20 billion, remains locked in rescue talks with creditors. Ministers say the firm is financially stable, but precautions are being stepped up. More than 50,000 people are now believed to have crossed the English Channel in small boats since Labour took office. Sir Keir Starmer's government has passed that milestone in 402 days compared to 600 days under Rishi Sunak. Official figures are expected to be released later. The Skills Minister, Baroness Smith, has told LBC it remains a very big challenge, but action is being taken.
The new scheme that we have with France, for example, means that where somebody doesn't have a right to stay, we can quickly return them to France. And we've already detained the first group of people who are illegal immigrants into the country, and we'll be able to return them to France. We've increased the numbers of guards at the border.
Two teenagers have been seriously injured in a reported stabbing in central London. The boys, aged 16 and 17, were found near Bloomsbury Square at about 2 o'clock this morning. No one's been arrested. The UK Health Security Agency has urged people to take sensible precautions in the hot weather. It says there are likely to be serious health outcomes during the heatwave. Amber and yellow health warnings are in place across every region of England. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 91.57. That is up 14 points. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather staying hot and sunny this afternoon. Cloudier with a few showers further north. A high of 34 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 12 is the time, but you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I think we need a new verb. We're going to call this being Rupert-ed. It's child campers who've been Rupert-ed now, and this means they have become victims of the febrile cultivation of hatred to be directed towards people born elsewhere who've made their way to this country. Police are now investigating an incident in which a group of teenage campers were targeted with racist and offensive messages online after Welsh villagers thought they were illegal immigrants. So the message now coming from Farage and friends is don't go rowing because people will think that you've made your way to Great Yarmouth from Calais in a canoe. And don't go camping because someone will put a post up on Facebook claiming that the police have fenced off the site and are guarding you. Because the facts disappeared from all of these conversations a long time ago. And yes, I will continue to ensure that you at least have access to the facts with regards, in the last segment of the programme, to crime as much as to immigration. But one area where things are actually out of control, or where things have actually gone bonkers, is shoplifting. And we find our attention returning to it relatively regularly. I should mention also that in Emma's Substack, Emma Monk, who we were speaking to a moment ago, she looks at the significant rise in shoplifting, which is now at its highest since 2003. But what shoplifting does is actually provide a contrast to most of the other readily available criminal statistics. If you find a politician or a member of the media pretending that crime is worsening, then they're going to have to rely exclusively on shoplifting and phone snatching, or they're going to have to lie. And phone snatching, of course, is also a consequence of the fact that everybody now walks around with a very expensive phone on a level that we didn't do until relatively recently. But I digress. Because what I want to talk about next is the simple bones of this story. It's pharmacies today who are the focus of reports, and they are hair-raising reports. There is an air of impunity surrounding shoplifting that still makes no sense to me. I'm going to tell you what happened to me when I got caught shoplifting in 1987 or 1988, okay? And I think this is the consequence, if you like, of my own confusion, that I'm drawing back to this. So I came out of Woolworths with a couple of LP records in my bag that I hadn't paid for. I succumbed to temptation on a scale that I remain not just ashamed of on a moral level, but also because of the disappointment that it brought to my mum and dad. But it's the detail of what happened that I think is going to be interesting. And I'm going to ask you at the end of this, what changed? So, like a lot of kids, but not all, by any stretch of the imagination, I got caught shoplifting as a teenager. And what happened was this. I came out of Woolworths, made my way towards, for those of you familiar with the topography of Kidderminster, I made my way towards the escalator in the Swan Centre. And as I made my way down, it's always Woolworths, isn't it? I bet shoplifting among young people has plummeted since Woolworths shut down, certainly since it got rid of the pick and mix. And also, I know what you're thinking. Why the hell did they keep the LP records in their actual sleeves on the shop floor? That was like temptation being put, but it was like the apple. It was like the serpent in the Garden of Eden when they decided. They didn't do it for very long because I suspect I wasn't the only person who decided to help themselves. No wonder they went bust. I digress. I got to the escalator. And as I'm making my way down the escalator with my ill-gotten gains in my bag, I notice a police officer at the bottom of the escalator. And I don't think that I was planning on legging it. But I may have looked over my shoulder, at which point I noticed a police officer at the top of the escalator. So they have got me, in the parlance of the criminal fraternity, they have got me bang to rights at this point. But you're counting, right? That's two police officers already involved in picking up a 15-year-old shoplifter. It then emerged, in the process of me being arrested, that I had been observed and followed by a store detective who was in the pay of several businesses in Kidderminster. And that means he would have been making radio contact with the police station, who would have been contacting the patrol car or whoever it was that was sent to pick me up, and therefore putting them in a position where they were able to arrest me. So there would have been a little bit of following going on and a little bit of observation. What's the official word for that when the police observe you? There's a special word for it, isn't there? It's not even that fancy. Like a, you know, anyway, it'll come to me in a minute. And they got me, and they drove me to the police station. A little bit of victim blaming there, Rob. You're right. I'm scaling Donald Trump's levels of victim blaming when I blame Woolworths for putting the LP records in the actual record sleeves. But if the LP records hadn't been in the records, well, look, if Vladimir Putin hadn't invaded, no, all right. It's a pretty weak analogy at the best of times. I can't remember what albums they were, Junior. Sorry, but I like the way your mind works. And they drive me to the police station where I am interviewed by a custody sergeant and put into a cell. And then I'm taken out because they have to contact my parents. That was one of the worst moments of my life. So my mum knew because my mum was just pulling up in the Swan Centre at the roundabout outside Blunt's Shoes to pick me up when the police arrested me. And so I had to sort of, I said, could I just tell my mum what's happening? And they took a view that my mum was not the getaway driver. So I could lean into the mini metro and say to mum, I've just been caught shoplifting, mummy. I'm terribly sorry. I appreciate this has probably ruined your day, but I'm not going to be home for tea. I have to go to the police station now to be processed. So she gets to sort of follow the police car to the police station. I can't be interviewed unless there's an adult present. They start the interview with my mum. That's two officers, police cell, police interview room, 15-year-old boy, possibly 16. And then my dad arrives, who's been summoned from work. That was awful. I'm not going to... Surveillance was the word I was looking for. Thank you very much. I was under surveillance, so that, I don't know what that involves. I don't imagine they had a helicopter in the sky following me, like in Pulp Fiction, but there might have been a little bit of entry-level CCTV cameras or stuff like that. So you've got surveillance, you've got arrest, you've got pursuit, you've got process, in a car, in a cell, in an interview room. I can't tell you the full story of what happened when my dad turned up because he's not with us anymore and I'll start getting a bit emotional. But it was not my proudest moment, all right? It really was not my proudest moment. I got into trouble a lot as a young person, and my dad was always on my side, but on this occasion, I really let him down. Stealing, it's such a silly, petty, stupid thing to do. And no defence whatsoever that I needed to, or anything like that, lest you think that I'm going to start making that ludicrous excuse. And I got processed. The cell was pretty bleak, as you'd expect. So I don't know what that cost. But it wasn't cheap. It cost a lot more than a Pretenders LP and a Guns N' Roses out. I can't even remember what I bought. So it was Goodfellas, not Pulp Fiction, forgive me. How different. So that was, let's say, just under 40 years ago, right? A 15-year-old boy, a 16-year-old boy, stealing, shoplifting, experiencing the full force of the law and the investigatory powers of the law. Caught, banged to rights, chucked in the back of a police car. Do you want to know something funny? I'll tell you something funny. I think it might have been the same summer that I worked on the building site, actually. What an extraordinary store of anecdotes were thrown up by that eight-week summer holiday. So I'm so cross and scared when I'm in the back of the police car that there's a briefcase next to me that obviously belongs to one of the coppers. And I kind of hit it like that. I go, that frustration. And he looks over his shoulder and goes, oi! And I said this, I said, my voice had broken then, but I'm going to pretend that it hadn't because it'll be funnier that way. I went, don't worry, I'm not violent. Don't worry, I'm not violent. And now, I can't open my newspaper without reading about people helping themselves to whatever they want from the shelves of all sorts of shops. Not Woolworths anymore, I grant you, because it's not there. But today it's pharmacies. And back then, it was unthinkable. Just for the record, the deterrent effect was immense. I never shoplifted again. Of that, you could be absolutely blooming certain. The shame, the horror, the fear, all of that. And it's the same country. We live in the same country. And we shop on the same high streets. And we have the same level of profit being made by the companies. And yet that element of this part of the social contract, or whatever you want to call it, has completely changed. I don't even know if store detectives exist anymore. You didn't really have security guards, but neither did you have to stick the barcode of your receipt on a little thing like you do in our local Lidl to get through the actual gate. So that is an extraordinary contrast, isn't it, between a particular type of crime today and a particular type of crime. Let's say, I think it was 1988, so I think I must have been 16. Oh, no, because you'd still need an adult present if you were under 18. But anyway, an extraordinary contrast between 2025 and 1988 on a very specific crime that is still, well, now it's considerably more prevalent. It's 12:15. I'm going to bring this introduction in on time for the first time in living memory with one simple question to which I will take every available answer. What has changed? Out of all of that process that I've just described to you, every single stage of it, every step of it, what has changed? And you can do it from either side of the law. You can do it from because impunity is a fence between the two, isn't it? Between the offender and the guardian. And the fence is gone. The impunity is complete now. 0345-6060-973 is the number that you need. A 16-year-old boy steals a couple of LP records from Woolworths and spends time in a police car, in a police cell, in a police interview room, and then on, not bail, but under caution until, I forget what the detail was. I had to go back to the police station about a couple of weeks later and be told that they wouldn't be prosecuting me. So I would have got a caution, I presume, a police caution. That was normal for a teenager in 1988. Some of the answers to this question are going to be obvious, and some of them, I hope, are not obvious, but all of them today are interesting to me. What has changed? 0345-6060-973.
This is LBC. When you're smiling.
Don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
When we're little, we don't overthink things. We're brave, confident, we laugh and ask questions.
And play.
And play. So why stop there? Just because we're adults, it shouldn't mean we stop trying new things. For me, starting a career in early years has meant not just a new job, but new skills, new friends.
Like me.
Yes, and a new sense of purpose. All that, and I can earn while I learn.
Yay, painting next.
Do something big. Work with small children. Search early years careers to find out more.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's a weird one, because the last time I talked about it, I wondered whether the actual companies being robbed were part of the problem. And I still think they might be. I'm looking at what has changed in the nearly 40 years between me being arrested for shoplifting and most shoplifters today being not necessarily shown the red carpet, but going about their nefarious business largely unmolested, unaccosted by any form of authority. So I mean, the things that are kind of obvious about what's changed will be logistical. Why are companies not paying more money to protect their stock, if you see what I mean? Is it victim blaming? It kind of is a bit of victim blaming. But the contrast between what happened to me and what happens now is so enormous that there's not going to be a single answer to this question. What has changed between 1988, when I got done for shoplifting, and 2025, when I don't think I would be done? I think I'd sort of have the entire top 40 by now in my bedroom, having half-inched it from Woolworths, who I think unwisely decided to store the actual LP records in the sleeves. Hit the numbers now, you will get through, OK? 0345 6060 973. We've got Simon Marks joining us a little later in the hour on the similar theme, actually. Donald Trump making all sorts of claims about American cities at the moment, but we're looking at the British story. There is another element, another reason why it's in the news. Business owners have been told not to put up pictures of suspected shoplifters in their shops in case they breach data protection laws. Listen, without even reading the story, I'd point out that if somebody was very, very, very vulnerable and hiding from a potentially abusive partner and shoplifting, then sticking a picture of them up in a area where the abusive partner might also be at large wouldn't be the best idea. But it's another story that makes you think something quite profound has broken in the very specific area of shoplifting. And let's try together to work out what it is, okay? 0345 6060 973. We've got more surveillance than ever before and more impunity. And those two things shouldn't be happening at the same time, should they? Philo is in Shaftesbury. Philo, what do you think?
Hi, James. I think, I mean, on the practical level, the reason what's changed is probably much more money was invested in law and order when you had your dramatic experience than is now.
Thank you. I'm glad you found it dramatic. I was using all my best storytelling skills.
I'm going to try and rival it with my own experience, yes, if you'll let me in a minute. On the why do people do it basis, because that's changed as well.
Yes.
I think that there's no longer the fear of authority, and also there's a much less respect for authority.
But that's chicken and egg, isn't it? Because I don't know how much fear and or respect for authority I would have had if that hadn't happened to me. So if you get caught,
didn't do it again, James.
No,
did
well,
you?
Exactly. But it was a fear and authority of what happened to me. It wasn't a fear of authority.
But that's missing now. That's missing now, you see.
Because you're not, that's what I mean by chicken and egg, because you're not going to spend a half an hour in the back of a police car worrying about your parents, and then a few hours in a police cell, and then another hour in an interview room, and then 3 weeks waiting to find out whether you're going to be prosecuted or not. That's not a lack of respect. That's a lack of ability on the part of the authorities to do what they did back in 1988. But we have to presume, Philo, they simply can't do now for reasons of personnel investment.
To a certain extent, I agree with you. But if you transforwarded the James O'Brien in time to this present day and you were 15 or 16, you wouldn't have done it. I just don't believe you would have done it. I think it's different now. I just think here, I mean, I was terrified of any police. I bet you still
shoplifted as a kid, though.
No, hang on, I'm about to tell you. Full disclosure.
Yes.
In a previous life, I used to be a lawyer, but I'm now retired. I've phoned you a few times.
I recognise your name.
In the 60s, we lived in Canada. We'd emigrated to Canada. And I was about 8 or 9. I was below the age of criminal responsibility, certainly in the UK. I'm not sure about Canada. But we'd gone shopping as a family, and I'd half-inched some sweets. We got home. My dad found me with these sweets, knew exactly what had happened. He didn't call the police. He didn't talk to me. He just put me in the car. We went back to the store. We went back to the cashier that he checked the shopping through. I had to tell her what I'd done, and then I had to pay for what I'd half-inched. And I've never done it again in my life.
But you didn't... that's not... Yeah, no, okay. So what we don't have now... It is either of our two experiences. Possibly a parent could still inculcate that in a child, but we don't have now the knowledge of what you should be frightened of.
Yeah.
And that explains. Okay. I mean, we've left poverty out of it, which is going to have to be a...
Well, yeah, I was leaving out the sort of necessity angle. You know, the teenager who nicks baby formula because her mother needs it. I'm leaving that out of account. There's an explanation there. Whether it's an excuse or not, I'm not qualified really to say. But just on a nicking sweets basis, I was so petrified, of my father's wrath.
Mm.
Not that he would hit me, might have smacked me, but it wouldn't have been anything dramatic.
Mm.
But it was the disappointment of him in me, and then the fear of having to explain to this woman who I didn't know.
It is definitely a part, a dimension of this factor, but it's not... That's why I keep saying chicken and egg, because that could be relatively easily fixed. And the answer to the question of why is it happening is the absence of the infrastructure that I experience. So I experience the infrastructure of the state. You experience the infrastructure of a parent. We can't control the infrastructure of a parent, nor can a state. It can try to help. It can do things. It can try to inculcate messages or disseminate deterrent. But the infrastructure of the state has gone. And it was a combination of public and private. So it was a store detective and a police officer. And I'm very conscious, particularly after the last hour of the programme, who thought there'd be parallels between Ukraine and shoplifting? But I am conscious of sounding as if I'm victim-blaming. But it must be part of the problem. In fact, a few people getting in touch to suggest that large supermarkets take the hit on shoplifting because they're saving so much by using self-service tills instead of humans. It's an anecdote. From John, but it seems feasible, doesn't it? You've not got holiday pay, you've not got sick pay, you've not got maternity pay, you've not got pay. The price you pay is that you've got much, much, much less chance of stopping somebody who is making their way out of the shop, having used no tills at all. Mike points out shoplifting is mostly a crime of poverty. Poverty goes up, shoplifting goes up. Before you start writing him off as a rose-tinted, spectacle-wearing, muesli-munching do-gooder, when I was a store detective, he adds, I was told that the companies save more money from having store detectives due to insurance than goes out of the door stolen. That makes sense as well. And Matt says, I think most businesses have always been able to absorb the cost of losing a few records or sweets and it would have cost much more to police it, but it was considered worth keeping on top of to stop it getting out of control. At some point in the last 20 years, pennies have been pinched, and lo and behold, control has indeed been lost. So this is really important that you don't think that we are victim blaming. But you cannot, I mean, in a sense, it's a victimless crime. If the people being stolen from can afford it, it means they're less troubled by it than we are when we witness it. And that might be part of the answer. The answer is not likely to be as simple as, oh, people just don't have respect for authority anymore. I'm not in any way maligning Philo's contribution. It is part of the problem, but whether it's a consequence of the issue or a cause of the issue is open to debate. What perhaps is missing from all of the coverage of this is it would be quite easy for the people, for the big businesses being stolen from, to fix. Discuss. You may be a former store detective. You may have run big shops. How easy would it be for you to actually get on top of this in your shop if you had the financial and personnel support from head office? Tell me it wouldn't be easy at all, actually. I'd welcome that. I just want any answer to that question. 12:27 is the time. Josie is in Southsea. Josie, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Hello. I was talking to your researcher. I was in retail from the point, well, I was 16 years old, and I've not been in retail now for the last 10 years. I went from a merely little Saturday girl in Dorothy Perkins up to an area manager of Calvin Klein and ooh, other places.
Dorothy
of me
Perkins.
When I came in.
Was that the Burton Group?
Burton Group. It was, you know, yeah, around the same sort of time when Chelsea Girl jumped into River Island.
Chelsea Girl became River Island, didn't it?
Exactly.
And they've got a few problems now, although it looks like they're going to survive. Carry on. Sorry, Josie, I'm interrupting.
Yes. No, don't worry. So I was in Dorothy Perkins. I've seen huge changes. And also I had to sort of instruct and guide people on security as well over the years.
Right.
But when I first started when I was 16 years old, the one massive change was that we used to have signage all around the store saying that you were being covered by CCTV. And normally those cameras were actually fake. But there was signage everywhere saying that we'll prosecute, et cetera, et cetera. And what we would do is we would stand at the front of the store on a box, and a very high box, in fact, 16 years old, check and surveying the store for shoplifters. And when we'd see a shoplifter,
we would then
have a code. Yes, we'd actually stand on a security box.
It was actually called a security box.
Yeah, we'd actually stand on the security box.
The shop really cared about it.
It was paramount. There was loads of training on it. We knew exactly what we had to do. We knew how the centre was involved in it as well, and how we would sort of what we'd have to say to the centre if we saw someone, and what information we'd have to give them as well. So it was all the W's. So we had to know who it was, what it was that was stolen, where the item was at this current time, and we'd have to be able to survey the whole time, and you weren't allowed to take your eyes off them.
Right.
So if you spotted someone, you'd swap over with someone else, then that person would be followed around the store, and at that point someone else would have called security. Security would be at the front of the store, and this person would absolutely know they're being watched.
Yeah?
Now, that person would then be caught. If that person normally, 9 times out of 10, they would dump things under rigs and they'd want to just leave. But they'd actually be apprehended outside anyway and given the fifth degree.
Sure.
But when it changed...
Yeah, go on. This is fascinating.
When the stores then decided and the companies decided that it would be too expensive to prosecute every single person, and because it would take away people from the stores, staff would have to be paid, managers would have to be paid to go to court, et cetera, et cetera. So they then decided, you know, let's not worry, let the insurance will take over.
Yeah? So if they'd pursued me, if they'd prosecuted me back then, they'd have needed, I don't know that they'd have needed a shop assistant from Woolworths, but they certainly would have needed the shop detective to take a day off to come to court, and that would have meant him being paid for that day and potentially whoever was going to replace him on duty in town to be paid as well.
The staff member would have had to have left the store, though, to give a statement at the police station, and that would have to have been paid as well.
Yeah.
And sometimes that would have taken the entire day. You'd literally be hanging around
for
ages.
Do you really think it was that? I mean, you were there. I can't argue with you. I can question you. Do you really think it was that simple that somebody upstairs just realised we're probably going to make more money if we let the shoplifters go than we are if we carry on pursuing them all?
Yeah, because the signage came down. I remember the day when they sent through a memo. Before we had email, it would be called a link message.
Yeah.
And you would start at one store and they'd ring all the other stores.
I remember that.
And they'd say,
I remember that. I used to answer the phone and they'd tell you someone was on. In fact, you've just reminded me of the time that I did a bit of detective work myself. I might look at that later. Well, listen, you're one shop assistant, albeit with lots of experience, I beg your pardon, one area manager who started off as a Saturday girl in Dotty P's, as we used to call it, but you're there in the moment because you're looking for a pivot. I tell that story about the change that's taken place over the last 30-odd years. There's going to be a pivot point. It's not going to be a guillotine. It's not going to come down like a curtain like that. Before that, everything was like this, and after that, everything was like that. But there's going to be, on a graph, there's going to be a point, isn't there? When suddenly, or not suddenly, slowly, everything changed. And that is one brilliant suggestion as to what it might have been that changed. And that's why I'm so conscious of guarding all of us against accusations of victim blaming. Because the people being stolen from seem to, at this point, have played quite a large part in the processes we're describing. People I feel sorriest for, of course, are the smaller businesses who are going to be subject to similar problems, but who don't have the bottom line to absorb it all. It's 12:33. Amelia Cox is here now with your headlines.
President Zelensky has welcomed the support of European leaders ahead of Donald Trump's talks with Vladimir Putin on Friday. EU countries released a statement earlier insisting territorial integrity must be respected. The government says it's ready for all eventualities following reports it's appointed insolvency specialists to step up planning for Thames Water. Britain's largest water firm, which has a debt pile of nearly £20 billion, remains locked in rescue talks with creditors. And health alerts have come into force around the country with temperatures in the mid-30s expected. Officials say there could be a significant impact across health and social care services in the coming days. LBC weather, much of the UK will be hot and sunny. One or two showers possible for Northern England, Northern Ireland and Scotland. A high of 34 degrees.
LBC.
The holiday park industry is in the spotlight after thousands of holiday park homeowners lost what they...
You've heard it in the news. Holiday park homeowners being hit with sudden site fee increases, fake resale promises and dramatic losses in the value of their holiday homes. The Holiday Park Advice Centre could help you get compensation if you were missold. Contact the Holiday Park Advice Centre today. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centreline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
12:36 is the time. Staying on, I mean, shoplifting is the exception to the rule, actually. Various figures in both politics and the media desperate to portray our country as being particularly unsafe, so much so that one reform character was recently claiming she'd felt much safer in Chicago and Washington, or New York, I forget which is a little bit inconvenient, really, because Donald Trump has just announced that those places, Washington in particular, is so desperately unsafe that he has to bring in the National Guard to protect it, something that, if memory serves, and we'll talk to Simon Marks in a moment, he didn't do when they were attacking the Capitol on January the 6th. I could be wrong, but it's a moot point. Because I'm just reading on my screen that another member of that outfit, Richard Tice, has called for more men to patrol the streets to protect women, which suggests that he's not aware, when you think of what kind of men are going to be turning up to answer the call from people like that. Probably the same men that turned up to riot last summer when people were spreading disinformation and blatant racist lies. 2 in 5 of whom had been reported for domestic abuse in the past. So I don't know whether these characters realise what they're playing with then when they make these sort of pronouncements, but I do know that there is enormous political capital to be made in pretending that things are much worse, especially if you can blame it on foreigners. But even if you can't blame it on foreigners, pretending that things are much worse, that the wrong'uns are out there causing mayhem. They're eating the cats, they're eating the dogs. You remember that, a big part of the campaign trail. But even against that backdrop and with that understanding, Donald Trump's actions... Well, let's get Simon Marks to tell us what happened, and then we'll perhaps dig into the why of it. So, Simon, welcome. What happened?
Well, just to go back to January the 6th, James, actually the National Guard was deployed at the instigation of the mayor of Washington, D.C., Muriel Bowser. She put about 1,000 National Guard troops on the streets at around 2 o'clock that afternoon. It wasn't until 4 hours later that a Trump administration official, the acting defense secretary, authorized an additional 4,000 National Guard troops on the streets. So at that point, it was the Trump administration putting the brakes on, not the mayor of the city. This time around, we
Hang
have
on,
got
let
Donald
me,
Trump...
Let me pause you briefly, because in the first hour, it took us about 20 minutes to remember that a large part of Donald Trump's problem with Volodymyr Zelensky may well be that Volodymyr Zelensky defied him back in 2019 in circumstances that got Donald Trump impeached. You've just reminded us that in a couple of years ago, Muriel Bowser also essentially defied Donald Trump or caused him embarrassment by calling in the Federal Guard in circumstances that he didn't want them to be called in.
Right. And I think the bigger picture here, this relationship between Muriel Bowser, the mayor, and Donald Trump, the president, is extraordinarily complex for Mayor Bowser because of the very specific governance issues that lie at the heart of Washington, D.C. Remember, this is not a state. It's only been since 1973 that this city even had an elected city council and an elected mayor. Prior to that, Washington, D.C. was run by presidential fiat, and Donald Trump's very keen on returning to that situation. And this may be why he's decided to begin the process of making law and order and crime in Washington, D.C. an issue, completely overstating, shamelessly overstating the reality of the situation on the ground here. I mean, that speech yesterday, the briefing at the White House in which he referred to the city as being riddled with crime, bloodshed, squalor, bedlam, and worse. I mean, it was echoes of the American Carnage inaugural address back in January of 2017, but it's not a description of the city that is at all recognized by the vast majority of people who live here. What Donald Trump sees in Washington, D.C. and in Mayor Bowser is a soft target. He can do what he's doing, flood the zone with National Guard to bring about an end to what he referred to yesterday as complete and total lawlessness, which doesn't, of course, exist on the streets of Washington, D.C. But he can use this as a litmus test for what he wants to do in other major cities controlled by Democrats across the country. And he was open about this yesterday. He spoke yesterday about Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, Oakland, Baltimore. He intends to take this plan and go national with it and confront other Democratic Party lawmakers who have less capacity than Muriel Bowser to soak up what he's doing. She's kind of soaking it up because she's very worried that otherwise he's simply going to take complete federal control of this city. Others like, you know, Gavin Newsom in California, much more likely to hit back. Karen Bass, the mayor of Los Angeles. But you start it here and try and prove the proposition that National Guard can resolve what is largely a fictional crime wave in this city. Are there pockets of difficulty here? Carjackings on the rise, particularly in a couple of central downtown corridors? Absolutely. But the murder rate, violent crime statistics at historic lows. But the facts
just pause
don't
that
matter.
Again.
Donald
again.
Trump's out to prove something.
Historic lows. I mean, we're almost so inured to it now that these things don't hit as hard as they would do in normal circumstances. I'm going to play his own words because sometimes it's helpful to hear him saying the things that you're describing him saying, and then we'll come back to that point.
We're here for a very serious purpose, very serious purpose. Something's out of control, but we're going to put it in control very quickly like we did on the southern border. I'm announcing a historic action to rescue our nation's capital from crime, bloodshed, bedlam, and squalor, and worse. This is Liberation Day in D.C., and we're going to take our capital back. We're taking it back under the authorities vested in me as the President of the United States. I'm officially invoking Section 740 of the District of Columbia Home Rule Act. You know what that is? And placing the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department under direct federal control.
Historically low levels. Actually, I got a message off Simon who says, oh, it sounds a bit like London. Khan has destroyed London. And Simon, bless him, doesn't realise that that's exactly what's happening here. The terminally online right are constantly claiming that London is desperately unsafe when it isn't. And Donald Trump is claiming that Washington, D.C. is desperately unsafe when it isn't. I understand the possible plan to behave similarly in other Democrat-run cities, but what is there a big picture? I mean, who does this appeal to people who never go to Washington but who Donald Trump wants to be frightened? The same people who perhaps voted last year for fear of having their dogs and cats eaten by Haitians?
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely extraordinary to see Jeanine Pirro, who is now the U.S. attorney for D.C., this former Fox News made-for-TV judge. I mean, she was a real judge before she was hired by Fox News. She's now the city's top prosecutor, and she stood at that press conference yesterday and claimed that she couldn't invite her family members to Washington, D.C., because it is so dangerous and so impossible for you to traverse the city. I mean, it is laughable to make that suggestion. I mean, you know, my biggest decisions yesterday involved whether I was going to wander up the road to the fishmongers to buy some Branzino and get some peaches from the local grocery. My son was actually in the centre of the city yesterday and called me up and said, do you want me to run to the Greek deli and bring home some taramasalata?
I mean,
we are not sitting here. We are not sitting here as citizens cowed by the concept that we are about to be struck down by some monumental crime wave. And James, I've lived here for 32 years. I remember when this was the murder capital of the United States.
Yeah.
Murder and violent crime, I mean, just to give you a few of the stats that are out there, compared to 2023, homicides are down 32%. Armed carjackings are down 53%, and assaults with a dangerous weapon are down 27%. And if you go back further in history, in 2023, Washington, D.C. recorded 274 murders, a terrible number.
Yes, of course.
In a country that is gripped by terrible crime all over this country, fueled, of course, by the easy availability of guns. That was 274 murders in 2023. If you go back earlier to the 1990s, that in 1990 the city reported 498 homicides, in 1991 509 homicides, and at the time the population of Washington DC was much smaller than it is now. So these are 30-year lows, but as he did last week with the jobs numbers, 10 days ago with the jobs numbers, Donald Trump yesterday insisted the Metropolitan Police Force here in Washington has been cooking the books. I mean, literally, apparently, cooking the books for 30 years. And only he is the man who has recognised that this is going on and as a result is going to flood the zone with National Guard who have been ordered to be rougher and tougher than the criminals that they are apparently going to confront face-to-face on the city's streets.
I mean, I've got a few more questions, but I don't know that you'll be able to answer any of them. I'm wondering what would be worse than bedlam, bloodshed and squalor, because he said bedlam, bloodshed, squalor and worse. And I just want one more little taste of just how mad all this is becoming.
Our capital city has been overtaken by violent gangs and bloodthirsty criminals, roving mobs of wild youth, drugged out maniacs and homeless people. And we're not going to let it happen anymore. We're not going to take it.
I mean, it is the latest migration from the terminally on-right provocateurs who make a lot of money or garner a lot of attention by publishing nonsense about cities like London, in my case, and Washington, D.C. You should stress, I live in London. You live in Washington, D.C. We and nobody else who lives here recognises these depictions. Simon, our friend on the text, is convinced that they're both true. So that is the kind of character that he's appealing to. Do we have any idea how much salience these appeals have, whether or not they work, whether or not they do actually create a constituency of support?
Well, look, there's no question that in his mind he wants this to be a central plank of the midterm election campaign. Remember that we've got midterm elections here in November of 2026, and he thinks that crime and law and order play to his strengths. He was very clear yesterday. He accused the Democrats of being weak on crime. He said he's going to go after the sanctuary cities that many Democrats have created in strongholds across the country to offer immigrants some degree of protection against the ongoing raids by the masked agents with his Immigration, Customs and Enforcement Division. So he's going to brand the Democrats as being weak on crime. The statistics be damned. As far as he's concerned, if he doesn't like numbers, he just makes up numbers of his own on a whole variety of different issues now. I mean, to be clear, as in London, there are places here that I wouldn't want to be hanging out in at 2 o'clock in the morning on Sunday.
Of course.
I mean, the U Street corridor, the Navy Yard, which are these two particular thoroughfares where there have been a growing number of armed carjackings over the last several months. You know, the city's authorities themselves concede there are issues and problems there, and they've implemented a summer youth curfew to try and deal with them. But the notion that as you travel around this city, you are placing yourself in any greater degree of risk than you might be in London or, frankly, any other city in the United States is, as any Washingtonian will tell you, it's a laughable proposition. But it's a very threatening proposition as we head into that midterm election campaign, and he threatens to roll this out nationally because, on the one hand, he can make this an issue that plays to the strengths of the Republicans in that election campaign. But on the other hand, if things aren't going well for him and for his fellow Republicans as that campaign plays out, it is perfectly possible that what we're seeing here in Washington now, the deployment of the National Guard in Los Angeles back in June to deal with the anti-immigration protesters, these could be all a test bed for going to the country in a year's time and saying, you know, this country is just too insecure. Crime is too rampant. It is too dangerous out there. There's a national emergency. We need to think, I'm very sorry, my fellow Americans, about postponing these midterm elections. So in every sense, this can work to his advantage. And he may not even know yet himself precisely which route he's going to take with it.
A cowed population is a lot more amenable. Thank you, Simon. You slightly unnerved me with that final observation. I won't hold you to it like a latter-day Nostradamus, but I shall certainly remain mindful of it as these madnesses continue to unravel on both sides of the Atlantic, of course. And I it's probably worth pointing out that the mayor of Washington, D.C. is a woman of colour, because Sadiq Khan's ethnicity has an awful lot to do with the bigotries of people like Simon, who texted us earlier to insist that London has been ruined by Sadiq Khan, just as Washington has been ruined by Muriel Bowser. It's a lie. Whether or not it's a racist lie, I suppose, is a little bit harder to pin down.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Donald Trump promises to retain some land for Ukraine in peace talks with Russia. But is it more likely that they'll lose?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
Arenas full of fans. Stars taking it to another level. The excitement, the glory, the action. And you could be behind it all. Kickstart your career in esports with Global Academy's new esports production sixth form course. Get the skills and knowledge to join a fast-growing media industry. And you could even join Global Academy's own esports team. Thinking what next after GCSEs? Then find out more about the esports production sixth form course at globalacademy.com.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge, helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools, and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to say that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
So, close your eyes. Picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 70 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000 to over £20,000. And with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms and minimum spend apply.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
12:54 is the time. It's a funny one, isn't it? The crime exists, and it goes up and it goes down. And sometimes some crimes go up while other crimes are coming down. But the depiction of British cities and now US cities by profoundly and provenly dishonest politicians and public figures is awful. What if you're trying to make a bit of money in London or Washington, D.C.? What if you rely upon tourism or you rely upon people coming to visit? And they are being told blatant lies, not just online anymore, but now by public figures and professional commentators. It's absolutely extraordinary. But nobody is pretending that there is no crime. But some of the lies are so egregious that you wonder why anyone has to bother pointing them out. Still waiting for someone to come forward with proof that they were eating the cats and eating the dogs, which, of course, we were told, I think, on this radio station would definitely turn out to be true. Hey-ho. On we go. But one of the areas where crime has actually done all of the things that these people claim are happening everywhere is shoplifting. And I don't know why. I still don't know why. I wonder whether Josie's point about the companies actually taking a decision to suck it up rather than meet the cost of... At what point does that pendulum swing? At what point does it become more expensive to lose goods on the scale that they're now losing them? The story about what's going on in pharmacies today is hair-raising. Then they decide, oh, it's time that we'll have to push back. But they're going to have to make that decision themselves because the police aren't in a position to help as much anymore. Anyway, Dara is in Kilmore in Ireland. Dara, to help us with the question of what has changed, Dara, where would you go first?
Well, given my background, I've been in retail for over 30 years in the UK, mostly Scotland and the North East.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to go around and sort problems stores out. Used to be Tandy's. I don't even remember them, the electronics store.
Yeah, of course I do.
I used to have a franchise, which was brilliant. I loved it. But the thing is, it was a lot of places, because the margins weren't so high compared to clothes. Clothes were in the hundreds of percent, where electronics, in some places, was only about 10, 20%. Yeah. So losing that type of stock was, you know, a lot more costly, but they couldn't really write it off. But what big companies do is, they work out how much they lose a year, and they add that into the price of the stock. Now, if you actually had people that gave a damn, I mean, in Scotland, the shoplifters like to have a go. In England, not so much. You catch them, it was like, right, I'm caught, type of thing. I noticed that big difference.
Okay, I mean, I respect your experiences. It's not, there'll be a lot of Scottish people listening who may not like that depiction of a Scottish shoplifter being measurably more violent or belligerent than an English shopkeeper, but this is your experience and I respect that. I love that thing about margins. I'd never thought about that before. What on the high street now is low margin in the way that an electronics retailer was, Tandy was back in the day? Would Currys and Dixons and the rest still be low margin retailers?
Yes.
It's a lot harder to steal from those places.
That's correct, because they're protecting it. But then it boils down to the manager in the store and the staff.
Yeah.
I used to say there'd be stores there. It was like, say, Aberdeen, for instance.
Yes.
It was the junkie source of income. And from my first 2 weeks up there, I was in a scrap nearly every single day. But I got to a point that the security in the centre will come up to me and it goes,
forget
you
hear it.
The guys in the camera outside?
Yeah.
And they're all telling each other, the Irish guy's mad in there, don't go near that store. You know, because you stop them and prosecute them. And it was the same down south. I'd go into a store, I would lose phones, basically, on a daily basis, and then in like 2 years, only lose two phones.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way around. Are you looking at the shops that don't get stolen from and wonder what it is that they're doing differently? I think there might be an elephant in the room here, and I think you do too, and I'm very conscious of victim blaming. I've said that constantly this hour. But a large part, or at least a major contributory factor to what we're watching, to this explosion of this very particular type of crime, as almost all other crimes have been going down, is partly a consequence of decisions taken by the organisations being stolen from.
Yes. I mean, there's also the fear. I mean, I won't name the company, but it was very high margins at one point.
Yeah.
And, well, they kind of no longer exist on the high street.
Right.
Unfortunately, they finished.
Yeah.
But it was really high margins. And they were like, yeah. And I'd be like, just because of my years at Tandy's and having my own business, so I was like, no, I'm getting these guys done. But then they were terrified of being sued by an employee who got hurt.
Yeah, well, you can see why. I mean, that's a story I haven't had time to tell, actually, about the time I was sent by the manager at River Island to pursue a shoplifter around Worcester City Centre. God knows what. I'd be like one of those cats chasing a bus. God knows what I'd have done if I'd ever caught it. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on... Not a cat, it's a dog that... No cats chase, sorry. Fake news. You can eat cats and dogs. If you miss any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player and the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions and put your news categories in the order you want, as well as pause and rewind live radio. Listen to a range of podcasts like James O'Brien Daily, an hour of the best bits from this show every day. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. From cats to rats. Isn't it hideous? They've taken over the whole building, say residents. The stuff of nightmares. Tenants outnumbered by rats and living in fear. We'll have a report from Helen Hoddenott. And you tell me whether you're facing similar or maybe a different kind of pest. To a group of men who took matters into their own hands on a train to contain a man going berserk. He's now being treated for mental illness. Retailers and shoplifters. The retailers want to put pictures of known shoplifters up in their shops, but they're told they can't. There are plans by one local police commissioner to tag offenders. Nurse attacks are on the up as well in accident and emergency units. What the heck is happening in our country? But we'll start with Ukraine. A much bigger question, I suppose.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, European leaders are stepping up pressure on Donald Trump to defend Ukraine's interests at a summit with Russia. A statement agreed by all EU states except Hungary says the Ukrainian people must have the freedom to decide their future. The US president used a news conference yesterday to suggest land swaps could be discussed in Alaska on Friday. Defence analyst Professor Michael Clark says it would have made interesting viewing in Moscow.
Putin now knows he doesn't really need to make any big concessions. The tone of President Trump's comments at the press conference were all pro-Putin. They were all in favour of the respect he feels for Putin. And yet again, he's gone back to being really critical of Zelensky.
The government says it is stepping up preparations in case Thames Water collapses and is reported to have appointed insolvency specialists. Thames Water, which is in almost £20 billion of debt, is locked in talks with creditors over a rescue deal. More than 50,000 people are now believed to have made small boat crossings in the Channel in the 400 days since Labour took office. Official figures are due to be released later to confirm the milestone. Education Minister Baroness Jackie Smith has admitted the figure is unacceptable and it's a very big challenge for the government. Meanwhile, Tory leader Kerry Badenoch says it shows the government's pledge to smash the gangs was just a slogan.
Things are so much worse since Labour came into office. They have no plans. Their one-in-one-out scheme isn't going to work. And what we're seeing is a lot of local communities having to pay the price and bear the brunt of the government's incompetence.
Emergency services are still at Arthur's Seat in Edinburgh, where they've been battling a fire for more than 40 hours. Officers say most fires of this nature are started by human behaviour. And heat health alerts have come into force across the country as temperatures could reach 34 degrees Celsius this week. Amber warnings are in place for central and southeastern parts of England. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 7 points at 91.37. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, much of the UK will be hot and sunny. One or two showers possible for Northern England, Northern Ireland and Scotland. A high of 34 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. We know that Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are to meet later this week on Friday, a meeting that Volodymyr Zelensky has not been invited to. This is what Donald Trump, the US president, had to say about it yesterday.
I'm going to meet with him. We're going to see what the parameters are. I'm then going to call up President Zelensky and the European leaders right after the meeting. Yeah. And I'm going to tell them what kind of a deal. I'm not going to make a deal. It's not up to me to make a deal.
Well, that was his take. He'll call President Zelensky, he says, immediately afterwards. Those European leaders, he said he'll also call, have warned against Ukrainian borders being redrawn by force 2 days before that meeting takes place. European leaders said in a joint statement, the people of Ukraine must have the freedom to decide their future. Now, it's clear that Donald Trump is starting to send messages that he believes, I mean, he believed he could stop this war in a day. Was it 24 hours, a week, whatever it was at the beginning of his time in the White House since January? But he started to give indications that he will commit to helping or trying to help Ukraine retain some of the land it's lost, even regain some of the land it's lost. That isn't the sense that people have had. The sense that people I've spoken to, and on air you'll have heard them, is that Ukraine in all likelihood will have to accept that some of that land to the east and Crimea is lost. I mean, Zelensky has never accepted this explicitly. But this is what he had to say on a social media post, President Zelensky, saying he's skeptical, as ever, about the Kremlin's moves.
Putin is determined only to present a meeting with America as his personal victory and then continue acting exactly as before, applying the same pressure on Ukraine as before. So far, there is no indication whatsoever that the Russians have received signals to prepare for a post-war situation.
Well, General Sir Richard Sheriff joins me, a former British Army officer and NATO Deputy Supreme Allied Commander for Europe. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you, and thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. What's your reading, then, of what we're hearing from Donald Trump at the moment?
Oh, I think the record has got stuck. I don't think we're hearing anything new, particularly. He is back on the trail. He thinks that he's going to be able to get a deal with Putin, or at least he says he wouldn't be doing it if he didn't. But the reality is there will be no lasting ceasefire in Ukraine until Russia and Putin accept unreservedly that they're never going to get Ukraine. Anything else is going to be a stitch up for Ukraine.
And when you say never going to get Ukraine, do you mean all of it, including the eastern areas that they've taken?
Russia can never think of itself as the country it wants to be unless Ukraine is either a client state like Belarus, and part of it will be part of Russia. I mean, Putin has never stepped back from his maximalist demands. Crimea, the four eastern provinces, client state government. Oh, and don't let's forget, NATO rolled back to its pre-97 borders as well. That's what the war is all about. And if there's what I call a capitulation deal forced on Ukraine because of the weight of America and Trump getting into bed with Putin, make no mistake, Putin will come back at some stage in the future to ensure his demands are fully satisfied.
And if there was what you call a capitulation and that area in the east was even, temporarily yielded, is it your reading of things that would just be a green light for Putin to go further down the line?
Absolutely. Yeah, and what we've got to remember, it's not just land that this is about, it's people. It's Ukrainian people under Russian occupation and consigning large numbers of additional Ukrainian people to the deportation of children, the brutal treatment of women and other prisoners, and all the paraphernalia of Russian occupation, which frankly differs not any way at all from what happened in the Warsaw Pact days.
And to be clear, because we don't talk about this enough, the deportation of children, you mean without their parents?
I mean, don't let's forget, the President of the United States is about to welcome on American soil an indicted war criminal, a war criminal who had been indicted because of the deportation of children. He should be arrested, not greeted like an incoming head of state and an equal. The signal it sends, America is demeaning itself and Trump is demeaning America.
Why do you think that is? Is it that Trump admires him, wants to be the same as him or something akin to him?